economic divide in America and its poisonous consequences. It comes from Demos. It's a series of essays by folks like David K. Johnston, the author of Perfectly Legal, which just that book was a beautiful expose of exactly how inequality is working in America to make the rich richer and the poor poorer. William Grider is in this book, the man whom Hunter S. Thompson referred to as Dollar Bill Grider. Apparently he, who at the time that Thompson was writing about him, was an arch conservative. And he apparently is coming around on the debate. The leading liberal evangelist in the United States, Jim Wallace, has an essay in this book. As well as... Barbara Ehrenreich is in this. This is a who's who of liberal thought, and a foreword by Bill Moyers that is shocking. Simply in the factual pattern that it puts forth, explaining exactly how it is that, you know, we're not necessarily talking about the screwing of the poor, poor, poor in America. We're talking about the screwing of the people who get up and go to work every day and work two and three jobs and still call themselves middle class. We are, in point of fact, talking about the screwing of everybody who makes less than $100,000 a year, and some that make more. Inequality matters. I look forward to our conversation with Jim Lardner, as I've been told he is commonly referred to. So, you know, we're going to be friends, so I'm going to call him Jim. You can go to inequality.org and learn a lot about the movement that lies behind this fascinating, fascinating book. And for my purposes, first of all, it's divided into segments. There's part one, how equal are we anyway, part two, dynamics of inequality, and part three, changing the conversation. It was part three that I ran to. Part three, changing the conversation, because if that's not what we're doing here, I don't know what it is that we're trying to accomplish. We must change the conversation. We must change the dialogue. We must change the frame. Our good friend Gail emailed last night to say that she enjoyed the way that we're approaching the top of the hour news now here at the Head On Radio Network. And as I've noted that this is not like, back in the day. I spent a couple of years working in the newsroom at CNN, and my job was writing radio news scripts and anchoring them. And I would have been thrown out on my ear for any one of the news scripts that I've participated in writing for the Head On Radio News Network, because it is what we are doing here is avowedly liberal. We are telling the facts and we are telling the truth. The fact is that the Christopher and Dana Reeve Paralysis Research Center has had its guts slit open by the George Bush 2007 budget. There is not a damn dime for the Dana and Christopher Reeve Paralysis Research Center in the Bush budget. Not a penny. Because why? Because it wasn't working? It was working. Because... it's not a good thing for the government to be involved in helping information get to people about paralysis research and being a resource where people suffering from paralysis can go for information, for hope, for enlightenment. No, that's a pretty good idea. I'd like my government to be involved in something like that. So you have to ask the question, why was funding entirely eliminated for the Christopher and Dana Reeve Paralysis Resource Center? And there's only one answer, and it's a simple answer. And as any scientist knows, sometimes the simple answer is the one that is most likely correct. And the simple answer is that when you are dealing with Republicans who will steal your money to give it to Halliburton, to Kellogg, burn and loot, to give it to their corporate crony friends in the form of corporate welfare and tax breaks for the people who are at the top of the 99.9th percentile of income earners in this country or makers, what you're dealing with are And I'm sorry, but this is mean bastards. Just mean people. Mean people suck. I want to see a resurgence of that bumper sticker in America. Mean people suck with the little frowny face in black and white. But next to the little, there needs to be a GOP elephant. 99.9% of the meanness in this country is perpetrated by people who are registered Republicans. It's Wednesday night, and we jokingly refer to this as prayer meeting night, because here in West Virginia, you know, you would be, you, maybe outside this state you'd be amazed, but in the deep south you're not. Wednesday night, everything shuts down. Only the heathens are in the stores, because everybody, from the Baptists to the Methodists to the Lutherans to the Presbyterians, yada, 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 everybody is in church Wednesday night.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, you're darn right. Wednesdays, the Bible Belt America shuts down on Wednesday night the same way they do on Sunday morning. And ever so many of those people in their the Southern Baptist churches and their and the other denominations that have been perverted and filthed up by Republican right wing politics, they're sitting in there and they think that they're worshiping Jesus at the same time that they're saying things like, "We got to protect marriage." And of course, you and I both know that they're not doing anything of the sort. What they're doing is worshiping George W. Bush. What they're doing is worshiping Mammon, Baal, whatever. And my apologies to the pagans, because actually, well, you get the idea. But that is the source of the vast majority of the meanness in this country. It is nothing but abject meanness that says that building more bombs are more important than healing more spines. Right? I mean, I'm sorry, there I go being negative and liberal again. I'm not telling sunshine stories about mourning in America. Ugh. Now, I want to share an email with you before our call comes in. This comes from our good friend Fritz in New Mexico, based in regard to our conversation last night regarding the poisoning of America's children and America's grown-ups, too, if you get right down to it, because just because you're 25 or 35 or 40 doesn't mean a big honking glass of iced perchlorate is good for you. I mean, that's why you don't buy a can of tomato juice and says, "Now with perchlorate!" No. Our good friend Fritz writes from New Mexico, "Bob, in case I can't phone tonight, I, the PhD in molecular biology type, feel compelled to increase everyone's understanding of the perchlorate issue. Bottom line, biologically, thyroid hormone, TH, thyroid hormone affects nearly every tissue in the body, raising its basal metabolic rate, its rate of sugar consumption, protein synthesis, and turnover, read growth, development, and repair." That's what the basal metabolic rate is. "In a child," Fritz writes, "the brain is a key target of thyroid hormone. Perchlorate, provoking thyroid problems, has the potential to retard brain development. Hence, bottom line, sociologically, as advised by several holy texts," not religiosity, but real spiritual wisdom, "enormous, you only attack, as advised by several holy texts, you only attack, make war upon yourself. As a bellicose society that invests enormous resources in the fabrication of the tools of war, we stand to, in fact, make war on ourselves. On the next generation. We are, in fact, in the process of self-destruction at every level, economically, biologically, and sociologically. What a travesty. What a crime." So saith our learned friend Fritz in New Mexico. This is a nice point, to point out that we are very fortunate at Head On. Head On Radio Network is most fortunate. In our listening audience, are we have a department chair, I believe, in biology or physiology in Oklahoma. We have a Ph.D. in molecular biology in New Mexico. We have a rocket scientist in Maryland. We have musicians. We have artists who work with their hands. We have poets. We've even got a couple of religious clerical types. We've got carpenters, joiners, millwrights, miners. We have mothers. We have those who reach out to the wounded and the weary. We are blessed in the broad spectrum of human thought that communicates with us and communicates with the nation and the world. And it is this broad spectrum of thought that will bring on the sea change that must come to this country if this country is to be saved. Now, on the phone with us at this point in time is another individual engaged in working toward that sea change. As I told you before, Jim Lardner, James Lardner is with us from Demos.org and editor of Inequality Matters. Jim, are you with us there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, sir. I do appreciate your time.
I am glad to be here.
Now, I've been reading through Inequality Matters. And I'm amazed with the like I said, the broad spectrum of thought that's encompassed in it. How did it come to be?
We had a conference to begin with on this subject. I guess the motivation for the conference and for the book were the same. The feeling that this has been going on for nearly three decades in America, this increasing concentration of wealth and income, and that it was time to pause and take stock, see how this had changed our country.
Well,
I think that's a major part of the book. I'm proud of that, that we have, as you said, we kind of looked at all the dimensions of life in which you can see the changes, and have found people who were in a position to describe them powerfully, and in some cases, I think, eloquently.
Well, there are many passages in this book, Jim, is Jim okay?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. They're chilling. I mean, the simple title of Tamara Drought's essay, "The Growing College Gap."
Yep.
My God in heaven, Jim. Why in 2006 in the United States of America are we talking about a college gap?
And what you're talking about there is a gap between the rate at which high-income Americans are getting into four-year colleges and low-income or other Americans are getting into four-year colleges. It's not that there aren't more people going to college than ever. There are, but the advantage that people who come from high-income families have has actually grown in recent years, and it's as high as it was in 1965, when the United States passed the Higher Education Act, which was explicitly designed to close the class divide in higher education, Lyndon Johnson and other people back in the 60s had the foresight to imagine that college was going to become even more crucial to people's economic well-being and other aspects of their well-being, and put in place a set of policies that actually worked for a time to make income and social class less relevant in determining whether someone could go to college. Worked for a time, but then we let tuition soar and the financial assistance lagged, and here we have the trend reversing again.
Well, you know, I think it strikes me, I remember when George Bush was talking not too long back about how he wanted everybody to go to community college. And community colleges do great work in this country, but I don't think we're fooling anybody by suggesting that Harvard and the left elbow West Virginia Community College are the same educational opportunity.
And a very high percentage of people who go to community college do not get a four-year degree or do not get it anytime soon. So that's another step up the ladder that people are often not making in this country, not because of any lack of smarts or academic ability, but because of a lack of money.
Exactly. And then we see, and the money is frankly going away, isn't it?
And people are either, in some cases, being intimidated and not forking up the money, not going to college, or in other cases, people are scraping it together by hook or by crook, and that often means going into absurd levels of debt.
Well, if this nigh unto 30-year trend in de-educating and de-equalizing America persists, Jim, are you able to do you have a crystal ball there? Can you tell us either in the book or here this evening where are we headed?
It does depend in the first place on what you believe are the deeper forces at work in history. I personally believe that humanity over the long haul has been moving away from a certain kind of hierarchy towards something more like equality. Slavery and royalty have been eliminated, after all, at least largely. And the United States was in the forefront of this kind of a movement. Our founders laid out a path that was going to lead away from an aristocratic society, one where people's rank was determined when they were still in the womb,
mm-hmm.
Toward a society where everyone would have a fair shake, regardless of their origins or ancestry. And through good, long pieces of our history, that has been the path that America was on. I think it's what a lot of people think America stands for, along with democracy and is opportunity. And opportunity and democracy are the two things that are most obviously undermined by this trend of growing economic inequality. But aside from just the kind of direction of history that gives me some optimism, I think America is waking up to the implications of growing economic inequality and waking up, more importantly, to the fact that it's not some kind of natural phenomenon dictated by the free market, dictated by these deep, impersonal, irresistible forces, technology and trade and so on. If you look at all the developed countries of the world, you see that a lot of them had a sharp decrease in inequality, as did the United States, too, in the years of the Depression and World War II. By and large, those other countries did not have what we have had, which is a sharp increase in economic inequality in more recent years. We are pretty close to unique, the English-speaking.
This was a deliberate act, in other words.
I think so. I think you could say that America chose to become more unequal, but of course it wasn't a choice in which everybody had an equal say or a choice that everybody would have endorsed if
right.
we had been conscious of it.
So, this book is going, this book, I expect that this book will do well in liberal and progressive circles, Jim. But, you know, to the people out there that would just as soon not pay attention to politics or they're too, you know, I've said a lot on this program that one of the problems with progressivism and activism in our country is that the folks that we'd like to reach out to are too busy carrying America on their backs to stop and listen. How do we get to them?
Well, that's a good point. People are too preoccupied with all kinds of pressing local concerns and personal concerns,
yeah,
to think systemically.
Yeah, keeping food on the family, you know, it's important.
I believe that it's not simply a matter of, as Thomas Frank has argued in his What's the Matter with Kansas, people ignoring their own self-interest. I think people also suppress their own ideals about how society should be. And I think you can make a case about the dangers of extreme inequality and rising inequality that is addressed to people who are well off economically, too, because I think most Americans share these values of democracy and opportunity. Most Americans feel that there are certain areas of life where it is wrong to have extreme inequality dictated by the dollar, health and education and rights of speech and all these areas we are finding are being commercialized and the inequality, the economic inequality is leaking into every area. I think that the right-wing coalition of values voters and kind of corporate, the other end of the alliance, the corporate funded right, is a jerry-rigged alliance that is waiting to fall apart when many of the people who reflexively vote for those policies, the policies of, you know, endless anti-government, anti-tax, deregulation, privatization, give a little more thought to what those policies are pointing toward.
Well, let me ask, if I may, as we look forward and we hope for the collapse of the right wing AstroTurf organizations. How do we? I mean, you run inequality.org. Do you provide grassroots suggestions and solutions there for people who do want to get out and do something about it and change the future?
I work for an organization called Demos,
right,
which is a progressive think and action tank, and we work on issues of economic opportunity and inequality, and also of the political process of trying to make the American democracy more inclusive and more of a democracy, frankly. And I think that there is plenty of stuff to do in both these areas. We have, for instance, we have a campaign finance system that now gives us a 99% re-election rate for the House of Representatives in the last election.
Exactly.
There are things you can do, election day registration and also ending eventually, I hope, the crazy policy of disenfranchising nearly 5 million people in America because of felony convictions. In some cases, drug convictions, and some.
What about public? If I could just, and I know I'm running afield, but I imagine that at a place like Demos, you probably think about things like this sometimes. What about public financing of campaigns in America?
It's happening in some states, you know, and the effect,
we're pushing for it here in West Virginia.
The effects in Arizona and Maine have been pretty interesting. You see, in Arizona, you see people who are not getting into politics who are not the usual suspects. They're not people with money.
People with ideas?
It's a pretty inspiring example. Yeah, on the other side of the coin, in the systems such as elections for Congress where we allow money to rule, we have insane things going on. We have people who are becoming candidates just because they can get money to spend. In my state, New York, the Republican Party has spent a long time in the last 6 months dallying with a potential candidate for governor, Tom Golisano, whose only attraction for them is that he's a millionaire and he could spend lots of his own money. In fact, he spent it in a previous campaign denouncing the incumbent governor, Pataki, from the right, and trying to run against him. Parties will nominate anybody now who can raise enough money.
Yeah.
And you now see people's candidacies imploding because, you know, they're not raising enough money in the months before the campaign really gets rolling, like this guy in Ohio who got
Paul Hackett, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's going to be central to any meaningful change, politically speaking, in America. I read David K. Johnston's Perfectly Legal a couple of years ago, and it just blew me away. And he's in this book as well. Does your organization look toward things as, I guess the word is wonkish, as tax policy?
Well, we have, as you say, a chapter by David K. Johnson on this subject, and partly what he's describing is how much more regressive or how much less progressive the tax system has become over the last 30 years. That's a long-term process. Partly what he's describing is very much what we're seeing in the whole Abramoff scandal, with where you learn now how much of so-called earmarking there is of benefits in legislation, often at the last minute, that nobody pays any attention to serve the interests of campaign contributors, or in some cases, one can say confidently, bribers, because that turns out to have be what it is quite clearly in some instances.
Randy Duke Cunningham kind of showed us that.
Yes. And in David K. Johnson's book and in his chapter in our book, he shows you how just in the astonishing number of changes in the tax law that have been engineered to benefit special interests and big money in this country, we now have a tax system that in toto, federal, state, local taxes, property taxes, income taxes, corporate taxes, is actually not making the distribution of income and wealth more unequal, not more equal. It's not progressive at all. And David K. Johnson points out that this kind of tax system has historically, it's what you expect in tyrannies and oligarchies.
Yes, dictatorships. Well, let me, as perhaps a final thread of discussion, let me ask you about your own essay in conjunction with David Williams in this book, Cold Truths About Class, Race, and Health. We had a discussion, and we have it frequently, about health care on this program, Jim. Is there a racial component to health, to health issues in this country, and is there an economic? It seems silly to ask, but do those components exist? Are you more likely to be healthy if you're wealthy?
Well, every other rich country in the world has as a kind of rite of passage when the society achieves a certain level of affluence, has decided to make health care a universal right. Instead, here in the U.S., we now have the only group growing faster than millionaires is the uninsured. In addition, we have a healthcare system that is profit-driven, and therefore it spends a vast amount of its resources on the needs of a well-heeled few, and everyone else is kind of getting the leftovers. There have been studies which show an appalling degree of discrimination on the basis of color, much of it unconscious. You see people, well, for example, if you have an accident out on the road and you have two otherwise identical victims and one is a person of color and one is not, you can track this, and you can see that some people get certain kinds of medical advice and help, and some people are less likely to get it. You can also see that people who don't have insurance are less likely to get certain kinds of help and advice. You can see that people who have high blood cholesterol are more likely to be counseled to take cholesterol lowering drugs or do something about the problem if they're white. So that's one dimension of the problem. But another dimension of the problem is simply that the kind of stress and the kind of environment that people of color, poor people of color, grow up in many of the cities of America is bad for your health, very bad for your health. And in fact, a highly unequal jurisdiction or community is also bad for your health. At least there's a close correspondence.
And then there's the unassailable fact that they don't put industrially polluting plants in the middle of Tony neighborhoods either.
Right.
Let me just ask you then. You said that industrialized wealthy countries, except for us, made decisions that health care was indeed a human right. That discussion came up specifically last night on this program. Now, what you get out of the right wing is that if you say something like that, you're automatically a communist or a socialist. How do we approach that with the American people against such miserable ad hominem jingoism?
Well, first of all, the people who say this are not immune to the same kind of thing. They could call themselves socialists. Certainly, their policies about military spending and there are a lot of areas of life. Let me just start over because that. There are a lot of areas of life in which everybody agrees that money should not rule. Even the Cato Institute. You know, you get somebody to come back to the car accident example. You have two victims lying in the street bleeding, you know. Who exactly is it in this society who would like to have them reaching into their wallets and bidding to see who can get the ambulance crew to attend to him first?
Yeah, right.
So there, the problem is that if you have an extreme degree of economic inequality, it's impossible to prevent that kind of thing. It's impossible to carve out these sanctuaries and say, okay, well, here we're not going to allow money to rule. You see this in campaign finance. You see it in the healthcare system. You see it in the education system. You see it in housing. It's a lofty principle to say, oh, we're going to make sure that we have a threshold of adequacy for everyone in this area, in that area, in certain what we consider to be crucial areas of life, but it's not an attainable principle alongside such extreme and rising inequality as we now have in America. We are drifting towards a third world-like distribution of wealth and income, and not coincidentally, drifting towards a more of a third world-like government and some of the same kind of disconnect between well-off and comfortable people and hard-struggling middle-class and poor people.
So I think back to the Clinton administration's attempt to get something along the lines of a start toward universal health care, Jim. Obviously, you know, that failed miserably. How do we approach that dialogue again?
I think that government is a little bit like Hollywood in that certain ideas and phrases become poisoned for a period of years, and people say, "Oh my God, we can't even talk about that," or you know, nobody will buy a ticket to that movie, or nobody will vote for a candidate who advocates that. But it is remarkable how quickly these things can change. And I guess we're waiting right now for the moment, for the tipping point, for the movement
drop,
or the candidate who is going to come out and speak about universal health insurance in a way that is just going to make it credible again. We had, who was it? Harris Wofford, I think, in way back in 1990 or 1992, who achieved that result and sort of paved the way for the Clinton administration's moment of courage. But Harry Truman, I think, proposed universal health
yes,
insurance
he did.
In 1947.
Right.
It's a good example of something that is just off the table now partly because of the nature of our political process. If you actually do some polling, you find out that most Americans would like to have universal health insurance. And I heard Bob Reich give a talk a month or so ago where he said that he thought the Clinton administration actually came closer to success than many people now give it credit for. In hindsight, it all looks like a disaster, but if you recall, when Hillary Clinton went up on the Hill, despite the absurd complexities of that proposal that they came up with for political reasons,
right,
people thought it was sweeping towards passage, and many big corporations were kind of on the fence. They ought to be supporting, you know, General Motors certainly ought to be supporting national health insurance powerfully.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But anyway, they were at least on the fence back then, and then the insurance industry kind of got to the Republican Party, and the Republicans got to many of their big corporate backers, and it became, you know, the tide turned.
Yeah, it's like the insurance industry put a collective horse's head in the Republican Party's bed.
Right.
One minute we're talking about national health care, and the next minute what were those two characters' names in that?
Harry and Louise,
and it's Harry and Louise on the television every 15 minutes, going, you know, we'll be commies if we go to the doctor.
It's hard to pull this commies thing off indefinitely, years and years after there are no commies left.
I know.
I think that this is going to dawn on somebody sooner or later.
Well, I'm afraid that, Jim, I'm sorry to have kept you so long. I've run you over your 15 minutes. I apologize. But I'm so very afraid that we're going to be applying one of those principles, one of those starting principles of a 12-step program to the entire United States at some point, that we're not going to get well until we realize that we're sick. And as a consequence, there's a whole lot of hell and misery that follows on that premise.
Yeah, I do think, though, that this particular sickness that I'm talking about here, extreme and growing economic inequality, is something we, many of us, really do realize. It's commonsensical that an extremely unequal society is going to be a society where people have less of a sense of community. It's going to be a place where there's less civic engagement, where the political process is kind of taken over by narrow interests and by money. This is something that Tocqueville observed 150 mm-hmm. years ago. Actually, he was talking about the tendency that way in Europe. America was going to be better than that. But anyhow, we can see, all of us can see, ways in which extreme inequality is bad for the society. And if it's not an issue now, and it's not, that's because we've been so brainwashed by kind of the orthodoxy of the economics profession, neoclassical economics, and by right-wing ideology.
Well, and haven't we also been scared away from even having the conversation, Jim? I mean, we have to worry about what color the terror code bar is. We've got to work, you know, we've been kept in a state of perpetual fear for, what, 5 years now?
Well, yes, that might be another way in which we're becoming more third world-like, which is that it used to be just in third world countries that when domestic conditions were really dire, the people took you to war to distract your attention from it. I don't know that we went to war in Iraq because a bunch of people sat down in Washington and said, let's distract the American people's attention. But we certainly do know that as we were going to war, Karl Rove and others were making sure that this state of war would last forever, or trying their darndest to make it last forever. In fact,
well, I remember
this war would never end.
Right, and I remember when the Iraq War resolution was set forward, and they later admitted it, that they put it, they set the vote for the Iraq War resolution in October because of the November elections in 2002.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to a certain extent been manipulated. Let me finally ask you this. Is there any particular best way for folks to get their hands on your book?
It's so easy.
Okay.
In bookstores, it's on Amazon, it's on Powell's, I think if we've done something valuable here, what we've done is to pause and take stock of a quarter of a century of growing economic inequality. And as you said, Americans' attention has been on everything else during that quarter of a century. It's been on O.J. Simpson. It's been on Iraq. It's been on Osama bin Laden. But this story is probably as profound a change and as important a change as anything that has happened in that period of time. It has changed us as a democracy. It's changed American education, primary as well as higher education. It's changed our healthcare system. It's changed our cities. It's The word luxury is now used every place as a kind of something that we all want. You could look everywhere and you see the signs of this inequality. The value of our book, I think, is that it makes you see all the connections, helps you see all the connections between growing economic inequality and many of the things that we all deplore.
Well, thank you very kindly for spending your time with us tonight, Jim. I know I took a little more time than I told Gail that I would, but this is not talk radio. This is conversation radio, and I'm absolutely hell-bent on having conversations. So thank you for being so patient, and thank you for sharing so much detail. Best of luck, and please keep us posted on your activities. Can folks find out more at the website?
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that. That was very thoughtful of you. We have, not only does Demos have a website, demos.org, as you might expect, but we have inequality.org, which is a website devoted to this subject. And you'll see there that there are many events and actions related to this issue. And wherever you are, and I know this station can reach people just about any place, there might be a panel discussion or a symposium or a talk coming up, or maybe you might want to organize one.
And is that something that you all are willing to cooperate in, that kind of thing, organizing symposia, helping folks organize speakers, that kind of thing?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Jim Lardner, thank you again so very kindly, and again, best of luck.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. Again, Jim Lardner, James Lardner, I'm too informal. James Lardner, co-editor of Inequality Matters, The Growing Economic Divide in America and Its Poisonous Consequences, co-edited by James Lardner and David A. Smith. If you are activist-minded, if you want to see a clear and cohesive picture of the America that the Morning in America, Ronald Reagan was Jesus' baby brother crowd, doesn't want you to see, you want this book. Now, over at WhiteRoseSociety.org, there are links to booksellers, and you can go there and, frankly, when you order this book, if you will order it through the link at WhiteRoseSociety.org, you will be helping out. You know, every night at the end of the program, we talk about helping out Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org because he is the hardest working man in liberal talk radio. You can do that just by ordering your book through his site. And I, like I said early on, we are so fortunate. Fortunate, that implies luck. It is natural that like-minded people would gravitate to each other. And as a consequence, when I speak, I know that for the most part, with the exception of the lurkers, that I'm speaking to people for whom inequality does matter. That I'm speaking to people who, when they see the dude under the bridge, they want to think about a way to give that person a better way of life. Or when they see kids that are going to work at 18 out of high school instead of going to college, think that there's got to be a better way, that if that person wants an education, that education should be available to them. Well, there is a lot of data, there is a lot of information, and there is a lot of motivation in this book. And you will be glad that you purchased it. And you're not going to go break. You're not going to go broke buying it either. So give it a read. The essay by Bill Moyers that introduces the book will make your hair stand on end all by itself. And like I said, I've kind of camped out in the third section. I mean, I read the whole thing, but I've camped out in the third section about changing the conversation. And it has impacted me. I'm still going to lose my mind from time to time and throw fits and get really, really pissed off at the mean people that we're dealing with in this world. But simply sitting back and laughing at them won't get it anymore. They laughed at the brown shirts, too. And they laughed, well, they laughed into 1939. So, you know, that's where we are. If you want to take part in the program, feel free. You're welcome to. You know the means by which we do it. Agnes is at the phones. I answer the email, bob@headonradio.com. We are chatting wildly away in the Tom Hartman chat room. That's Tom with an H and Hartman with two N's. So run by there and do that if you feel so inclined. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Party hat and satin dress, silver paper curled in a long black hair, tapping one small elegant shoe in time. Oh, the way she plays with them, smile at one and dance with another. Pretty soon they're forming up a line, and she's laughing, laughing into 1939.
Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and here's one of my recent rants on George Bush.
He's living an opposite world. It's like everything that he says, it's just completely the opposite to reality. Okay, he says that the low level of public support for his policies in Iraq showed that the public had been distracted from achievements made in that country by images of violence on the news. So he's blaming the news. He's blaming the news for reporting the freaking truth, rather than his propaganda, which he likes to catapult. All right. Well, I just wanted to deviate from the Alito stuff because I think it's pretty important to remember how stupid the president is. You know, because you know we need to know how stupid he is, right?
And so, in my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it, speech to the nation. I asked Americans to give 4,000 hours over the next, for the rest of your life, of service to America. That's what I asked. I said, 4,000 hours.
Join me, Bruce Birch, every Sunday evening, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, as we point out the stupidity of the Bush regime. AllThingsReconsidered.org.
Because liberals built America. Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 6.5 minutes before the hour. Let's get a phone call in before the top of the hour news. Bob is with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're Head On.
Hello, Bob.
How you doing?
Ooh, it was a bad day yesterday.
Oh, sorry to hear it.
No, it was. I wept. No, I did. I looked into something deep and ugly. You know, everybody wants to blame it on somebody else, right?
Yeah.
Hey, look deep into ourselves. Who brought 9/11 on us? We did.
In some ways, yeah.
No, in all ways.
The economic policies of the United States toward the Middle East, there's no getting around the fact that we have taught them to hate us.
Absolutely. That's a fact. But who brought 9/11 into America? Who took down the towers?
Well, that seems to be an open question anymore.
Yeah, it's not an open question. No, it's not. Not if you really look into the question. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Who brought it on us? We brought it on ourselves. We have been bringing it on ourselves since 1970, okay?
Okay.
1970. And nobody remembers.
Well, nobody remembers what we did in 1952 either. I mean, this thing has roots that go back a good ways. When we overturned the democratically elected government of Iran in favor of a brutal dictator, that seems to be the phrase we use, named the Shah, we told the Middle East what we thought of their notions of being free and standing up on their hind legs.
That's 1950?
1952, Bob. That is when we overturned the Mossadegh government in Iran.
1952?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 1952. We overturned the Mossadegh government.
Bob.
When they took over our embassy.
Please.
What?
Please. Don't call me sir.
Okay, but in 90, that I was raised that way. Okay, I mean,
I
can't
know,
get around it. So I know.
Hey, Bob. This is pray Jesus type.
Let's hit that point. Let's remember that when the students stormed our embassy in Tehran in 1979,
they
carried posters with the picture of Prime Minister Mossadegh on it, next to the pictures of Ayatollah Khomeini.
Absolutely.
It was payback. It wasn't just religious fervor or freakishness.
No,
it was payback.
Bob, you got to take religion out of politics.
Yeah, sure. I'm game for it. I don't like religion in politics.
I don't either.
Yeah, I'm not the guy that's trying to put it there. Oh, I got a story here later next hour. It's going to curl your hair.
Okay. Well, hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Glenda told me to tell Agnes that she loves her too, but she's never seen her.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, she just loves her. Glenda loves Agnes as I love Bob.
Thank you, Glenda.
Now, that sounds strange.
No, not to me it doesn't.
No, I know it doesn't. I love you as a son, and Glenda, she just loves Agnes. She just loves her voice. She loves her her person, her soul.
Oh, she is a great soul. She absolutely is. Bob, we've got to roll on because we're trying to hang tight to this new format. We've got to get the news started.
I know that, but listen, okay?
Yeah.
This one goes out to my girlfriend in England. What's her name?
No, that's our friend Sue.
Yeah, and this one is out to her. I love Sue, and I love Bob, and and I know that my friend down there in Florida that's going through the back surgery,
Rick,
loves me too.
That's we've got a lot of that going on. It may be what saves us.
But we have got to go.
We've got to go. We've got to hit this. Bob,
well,
have yourself a wonderful. Yes, sir. Yeah. Or yes.
Hey.
Yeah.
Now you can call me sir.
Okay.
For a moment.
Okay.
Just one moment.
Okay.
And Agnes. You put that skillet back in the oven where it belongs, and don't you ever threaten Bob with an iron skillet again, because I know, hey.
Well, it's not really a full skillet, Bob. It's just the flat griddle.
I don't care if it's a flat griddle. I got one in my cupboard, too. We ain't that dumb up here in North Dakota.
Well, you take care, Bob. We got to get out of here, brother. Later.
I know. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye now. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Friends, drugs and alcohol were the only friends I had. Then a real friend got me into a treatment center. It wasn't easy. Drug and alcohol addiction is a horrible disease. But I got better. I got my friends back, and I got my life back. Treatment taught me what a true friend really is.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Head on Radio News. I'm John Fox. Republicans in Congress stopped a vote today on George Bush's Dubai ports deal. Capitulating to the White House, the Republicans stopped a vote on an amendment that would have blocked the national security giveaway. Democrats say they won't stop until they have forced an up or down vote on selling American national security to a country with proven ties to Al-Qaeda. George Bush made his 10th trip to the Gulf Coast in 84 days Wednesday. Bush met crews who were demolishing homes in the lower Ninth Ward. He praised them and claimed that, quote, the vast majority of debris on public property has been removed, unquote. Bush promised that what he calls, quote, my government, unquote, will do what's necessary to clean up the mess his negligence helped to cause. In a related story, only $25 million of the $2 billion in aid for Gulf cleanup and reconstruction has been spent. That's the word from the new report released this evening by the Center for Public Integrity. Evacuees have been turned out of their temporary shelter while more than $1 billion remains untouched. More than 8,000 American soldiers, sailors, and Marines have deserted since the start of George Bush's war against Iraq. That's according to Pentagon records as of September 2005. Authorities in Iraq discovered 24 bodies Wednesday. 18 men were found in western Baghdad with their hands tied behind their backs. They had been strangled. Six people also died in car bombings. U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Peter Pace has recently said that the massive wave of death is being caused by what he terms as a relatively small group of people. In a stunning example of brutal irony, George Bush's budget calls for funding cuts to the Christopher and Dana Reeve Paralysis Resource Center. The 2007 budget didn't decrease funding for the center, it eliminated it altogether. The center was the dream of Dana Reeve, the widow of actor Christopher Reeve. Mrs. Reeve died yesterday at the age of 44. The Reeve Center is just one of many social or medical programs that were destroyed in Bush's pro-war budget. North Korea is playing with fire. The isolated peninsular country fired a pair of short-range surface-to-air missiles Wednesday near the border with China. Even more unsettling is the report from Japan that it's uncertain whether the missiles were launched intentionally or by mistake. The Roman Catholic Church announced Wednesday that more than 3.5% of its priests in Ireland are pedophiles. 102 of Ireland's priests are suspected of having preyed upon 350 children since 1940. The study only related to priests in Dublin. Only 8 of the priests were punished under the law. There has been no comment from Pope Benedict, who was a Nazi anti-aircraft gunner in his youth. George Bush's plan to cut $36 billion from Medicare ran into stiff opposition on Wednesday from dozens of his fellow Republicans in the House of Representatives. Bush promised trimming $36 billion over 5 years and $105 billion over 10 for Medicare, the federal health plan for America's elderly, mostly by slowing payments to hospitals, nursing homes, and similar health care providers. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. Reuters reports, Ken Lay, former chief executive of Enron Corporation, repeatedly lied to investors about the company, portraying it as financially sound even when it was spiraling towards bankruptcy in 2001. It was what Mr. Lay was saying, what the company was saying. I was trying to keep up the deception as well, said Fastow in his second day of testimony in the fraud conspiracy trial of Lay and Skilling. It was a lie. From Baghdad, armed men in police uniforms seized dozens of Iraqi private security guards from the firm's compound on Wednesday, but officials contradicted each other over whether they were arrested or kidnapped. Three of the most senior officials in the Interior Ministry insisted no raid was authorized by the company in Baghdad. Police raided the company after a complaint from a corporate client dissatisfied with the firm's security services. But Major General Mohammed Al-Hassan, the ministry's head of operations, in a statement, the Interior Ministry is not involved in any way in this arrest. The confusion was not unusual in matters relating to Iraqi security forces. The U.S.-backed Iraqi government has admitted that some units have operated beyond its control. U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has accused Iran of sending Revolutionary Guard forces into Iraq, his latest accusation of Iran meddling in the war. They are currently putting people into Iraq which do things that are harmful to the future of Iraq, Mr. Rumsfeld said. An Australian frigate was involved in a tense standoff with 6 Iranian gunboats while guarding Iraq's oil platforms on the Gulf Saturday. In internet news, it would seem that the Department of Homeland Security is demanding that Doug Thompson, proprietor of Capitol Hill Blue's hosting company, investigate what Doug Thompson, proprietor of Capitol Hill Blue, has been up to, but he is absolutely forbidden from telling Doug Thompson that this is going on. Mr. Thompson said, now that's a problem. I own the company that hosts Capitol Hill Blue, so in effect, the feds want me to turn over information on myself and not tell myself what I'm doing. You'd think they'd know better. I turned the letter over to my lawyer.
Ah!
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, thanks for hanging around. It's 5.5 minutes after the hour. Who am I trying to kid? I'm on the East Coast. It's 8 o'clock, baby. 5 o'clock and maybe on cruising into the dinner hour if you're among our many, many friends in beautiful California, Oregon, Washington. And I'm too mathematically simple to contemplate what time it is in Australia. So it's like plus 14 or something, and I can't do that. Thanks for that. No, but seriously, thanks for joining us this and every other night. I hope you enjoyed our chat with Jim Lardner. You know, Jim is, I don't like to embarrass people on the air or, you know, make them go aw shucks or anything, but Jim is the son and grandson of great Americans. Jim's grandfather was the great, well, among other things he was the great sports writer, Ring Lardner Sr. Jim's dad, Ring Lardner Jr., was one of those few bold, brilliant Americans who had the guts to stand up against the McCarthys and the Red Scare Republican freaks of the House Unactivities Commission, whatever the hell it was. He comes from good stock, and it's obvious to see in talking with Jim that he is persisting in his father's noble work. So let's go ahead and go to the phones. Rick is with us from Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, you're head on.
Well, you sort of stole my thunder, Bob.
Oh, daggummit.
You see, that's just the way you are. I wanted to comment on your guest. What a great guest. What a great guest to have, and what a great job interviewing him. You did a wonderful job.
Well, thank you.
Particularly, you had that talent to hold him over longer than he wanted, and I appreciate that.
Well, I tell him 15 minutes, but, if I as a host really give a damn about what's in his book, and I do.
Bob, I know your soul. I'm radio too. You did a great job. You held him on. You did a great job. And I know you're a nice guy, but you know you wanted to keep him as long as possible, and there's nothing wrong with that. And believe me, he's a fine gentleman and he's used to it. It happens everywhere he goes.
I hope so. I hope he is used to it, because what he's doing does matter.
It does matter, and he knew it. Believe me, at any given time, if he felt that you were being rude or you were interrupting his situation, he would have hung up. It happens all the time. Great job. Great guest. Let's have some more. Okay. And then the next thing. Gunny, Bob, I don't know where you're coming from. Okay? I didn't support any of these things that have gone down on the Palestinians or the entire Islamic or Arabian or Arabic world. I have been fighting this for 20-something years. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you want, so Gunny Bob, listen. You want to get your own butt kicked. You want to kick your own butt. That's fine. But I'm not going to stand here and say I'm responsible or every other American is responsible. And if you wanted to be totally honest with yourself, Gunny Bob, you didn't have a say in these policies in the Middle East.
No, none of us did. But I think I understand where he's coming from, Rick.
Yeah,
because I kind of live there too.
You got to be careful what you take responsibility for.
But I indict myself. I pay my taxes.
Don't.
You know, I wasn't. You know, I haven't been to. I have not been to a march in Washington D.C. I sit here behind my little microphone, but I've not been to a march in Washington D.C.
Well, you're about to.
Yeah, I think we are. but the whole point here is. For those of us who oppose the war, a time is coming where it's going to become so intolerable that staying at home is no longer going to be an option.
It's put up or shut up time. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think Bob also speaks to those people, and I remember those sissy centrist Democrats who said, well, you know, now that the war has started, we have to stand with our president.
Oh, I hate that. You know, that's the greatest game in the whole world. I've screwed up something, so now, well, gee, it's in motion. We can't stop it now. I know it really sucks. But, you know, if we...
Well, what it boils down...
We'll break something.
Well, what it boils down to, Rick, is, well, you know, now that the ovens are hot, I can't oppose Hitler anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I will not abide by that. I will not abide by that kind of thinking, and I think Bob sells himself short. I've been to the websites that he's recommended. I know guys that have worn chicken plates. I know chopper pilots that have door gunners in NAM. And I'm going to tell you something. These guys don't deserve to kick their own butts over what they didn't. They did it. They did it. And so did Bob. And I just can't stand to hear him take some kind of extra, you know, responsibility for something that was out of his control. Bob's good people, and he shouldn't do it. But if he wants to, that's fine. But don't expect me to. I won't do it.
That's fair.
You know? But at any rate,
This is not the marching society, Rick.
Yeah, that's it, man. And that's it for tonight. I'm going to cut it short because I got to get back to your producer about one little thing.
Okay, that's fine.
All right,
you take care,
so
Rick.
Much, and hello to everybody. How are you doing, CB? I hope you're well.
All right, thanks, Rick.
See you
take
later,
care.
Guys.
Bye now. I mentioned in our conversation with Bob that I had a story that would curl his hair, and I do. It's right here in front of me. Now, we have talked about how the enabling legislation from the House of Representatives, and I don't know if it got through into what was passed overall on the Patriot Act, the Secret Service Uniformed Division. You remember them, the secret police that they want to sick on us? Well, here's another creepy little aspect to Homeland Security, Union Security. No, it's not, but see, Homeland, you know, what a load of hooey. What a load of horse stuff. Homeland. It makes no sense. You know, there's a T-shirt out there that shows, like, four Native Americans on standing with rifles in there. This is the original Homeland Security. That's about all there is. Executive order. This is from the White House. I mean, I'm not making this up. This is not from The Onion. This is from whitehouse.gov, not whitehouse.org, the comedy site. Sit back. I mean, after all, this is Wednesday night. It's prayer meeting night. This is an appropriate story for prayer meeting night. By the authority vested in me as president, by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, boy, that makes me want to puke. And in order to help the federal government coordinate a national effort to expand... God, help me get through this without screaming and, like, busting the microphone. And in order to help the federal government coordinate a national effort to expand opportunities for faith-based and other community organizations and to strengthen their capacity to better meet America's social and community needs, it is hereby ordered as follows. Section 1. Establishment of a Center for Faith-Based and Community Initiatives at the Department of Homeland Security. I feel it coming. I don't think it's... A, the Secretary of Homeland Security shall establish within the Department of Homeland Security a Center for Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. B, the Center shall be supervised by a director appointed by Secretary. The Secretary shall consult with the Director of the White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. That's the WHOFBCI, WHOFBCI Director, the HOOBFCI. Prior to making such appointment, the department shall provide the center with appropriate staff, administrative support, and other resources to meet its responsibilities under this order. The center shall begin operations no later than 45 days from the date of this order. Wow, that's quick. Purpose of center. The purpose of the center shall be to coordinate agency efforts to eliminate regulatory contracts. Oh, Jesus, Mary and Joseph. The purpose of the center shall be to coordinate agency efforts to eliminate regulatory contracting and other programmatic obstacles to the participation of faith-based and other community organization in the provision of social and community service in Homeland Security? Shh. This is the concentration camp department of chaplains. Okay? I mean, that's just my take. Responsibilities of the Center for Faith-Based Community Initiatives. In carrying out the purpose set forth in Section 2 of this order, the Center shall conduct, in coordination with the HOOBFCI director, a department-wide audit to identify all existing barriers to the participation of faith-based and other community organizations in the delivery of social and community services by the department, including but not limited to regulations, rules, orders, procurement. Oh, procurement. Not procurement. Surely not procurement. Yes, and don't call me Shirley. And other internal policies and practices and outreach activities that unlawfully discriminate against or otherwise discourage or disadvantage the participation of faith-based and other community organizations in federal programs. B. Do we need to go to B? Isn't A enough to bring up dinner, lunch, and this morning's breakfast? Did you catch that? Including but not limited to regulations, rules, orders, procurement, and other internal policies and practices and outreach activities that unlawfully discriminate against or otherwise discourage or disadvantage the participation of faith-based and other community organizations and federal programs. Because, after all, as we are constantly reminded by the James Dobsons, the Pat Robertsons, and the Jerry Falwells of this world, they're being persecuted. That's right. Interstate 70, all the way from its beginning on the East Coast to its end on the West Coast, is lined with the right-wing Christians who have been impaled on posts and dipped in oil, and they're providing streetlights along I-70. That's right. They're being persecuted, because that's what persecution is. It's not persecution to say that we want to have a government that is not polluted with your weird religious beliefs. And what the fundies believe, trust me, is weird. I mean, you know, when you get to the part about how when Jesus comes back, Jerry Falwell gets to kill Jews, if that's not weird, there ain't no weird. I mean, if that's not weird, everybody take the brown acid, okay? That's where you are. Oh, sure, let's do B. Coordinate a comprehensive departmental effort to incorporate faith-based and other community organizations and department programs and initiatives to the greatest extent possible. To the greatest extent possible. Now, what a difference that is between the language of, say, Brown versus Board of Education that said the schools shall be integrated with all deliberate speed, which actually meant, you know, slow as humanly possible. No. When it comes to fundying up the Department of Homeland Security, they shall incorporate faith-based and other community organizations and department programs and initiatives to the greatest extent possible. They shall, the center, my left hind foot, yeah, they don't miss a trick with the language. The center shall propose initiatives to remove barriers identified pursuant to Section 3A of this order, including but not limited to reform of regulations, procurement, and other internal policies and practices. Why, we were talking about faith. Why are we talking about faith and procurement? Faith doesn't require procurement. Faith doesn't require a contract. Halliburton doesn't require faith. But that's where you are. This is the quiet business that is going to take away your tax dollars to go support some weird-ass fundamentalist church, okay? And not just a church, a mega church or a network of churches. And your tax dollars are going to do it. Now, see, this is where maybe Rick and I part company a little bit, because this is where I say that, if we let this happen, we've got some responsibility. There's an old legal maxim that says silence is acceptance. I refuse to remain silent about this. I will be, for what it is worth. Now, I won't send anything to Senator Byrd, because that's done. But I'll drop a note to Jay Rockefeller. I'm almost done with him. And I'll drop a note to Nick Joe Rahal. No sense in dropping a note to Shelley Moore Capito, because she's busy putting on her knee pads for George. I'll drop a note here and there. This is the most offensive thing. Go read it. Whitehouse.gov. They're proud of this. They won't put up sound bites of dear leader fumbling, stumbling over his tongue and getting his tongue wrapped around his uvula or whatever, saying the crazy crap that he says. But they put this up there proudly. They put it up there because they want the fundies every Sunday afternoon to say, well, you know, did you see what dear leader put up about how we're going to have our own little office in Homeland Security and we're going to get to minister to the heathen liberals when we get them in their concentration camps before we take them to the damned ovens? Yeah, they're proud of it, baby! Let's go to the phones. Andrew's with us from New York. Hey, Andrew, you're head on. It works better if you push the button, dear. Yes. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm trying to keep it together, man.
Yeah, man. I read that article, too, earlier this afternoon. And when I saw it, I almost wanted to vomit.
Yeah.
But it seems like that's their way of chipping away at, you know, the separation of church and state.
Chipping away? I mean, this looks like a sledgehammer to me, Andrew.
Yeah. Big one. Trying to slip
this is
radar, too.
Yeah, this is John Henry going through the Big Ben Tunnel with one in each hand.
Oh, God. I don't know. Oh, man. So who are they going to make head of this? Pat Robertson?
Yeah, why not? I mean, do you remember how they got caught when Katrina first hit?
Mm-hmm.
If you went to the FEMA website and they had this list of things that you could donate to, and like number two on the list was Pat Robertson's outfit. You remember that?
I remember that. And they got a huge amount of donations.
Yeah, they did. From people who didn't know it was Pat Robertson. You had to go through like four layers of URLs before you saw the word Marion Robertson, and then you had to connect that with Pat.
Yeah. I mean, oh my gosh. It's just, I don't know. That one takes the cake there.
No, there's...
I mean, how much crap can they... It's every day. They just pile on more crap and more crap, and it's like just keeping up with it, you know? It's...
Like I need some dude who handles snakes and drinks strychnine and rolls on the floor telling me that he's going to protect the homeland.
I mean,
when the next plane's flying into the next building, I rebuke thee. You know, no, it ain't going to happen.
I mean, that's, I guess he's throwing a bone to him. I guess that's his big bone he's throwing.
No, this is the whole cow.
Oh, God.
It makes my, and then the thing is, you know, I was down to, I was like down to B, and it goes
to stop. That's how I was when I was reading it.
It goes to Section 5, responsibilities of the secretary and reporting requirements and innovative pilot and demonstration programs. See, when you see things, Andrew, like innovative pilot and demonstration programs, that's the part where they get to write the check.
Yep.
I mean, do you remember the innovative pilot demonstration program in Knoxville, Tennessee, we talked about a month or so ago, where you know, your money is, you know, to the tune of about $500,000 or more dollars is going to print brochures for the Snowflake Baby program and adoption of frozen embryos?
Gosh, no, but I heard about that. I heard about that.
Oh,
that's
God. That's your innovative pilot program.
I'm speechless. When I read that, I was like speechless. I was like, oh, my goodness, what is this? This is... Okay.
Yeah.
Here it is.
You just look. I mean, I thought I got somebody sent me this link, and I thought, yeah, whitehouse.org. No, it's whitehouse.gov.
Yeah.
This is real.
I know. And 45 days, too, huh?
Yeah. I mean, they're serious about these 45 days. Now, you know, the Dubai ports thing, 45 schmortyfive.
Yeah.
These they want.
Oh, man. Well, I just wanted to call up and say that, once again, the Bush Co. never ceases to amaze, and I got to go and gnaw on this one.
Yeah, just kind of let it rattle around in your brain till it makes you want to scream, Andrew.
Yes, I think I'm going to go do that. I'm going to go to the basement and let out a blood-curdling scream.
Yeah, you know, then once you've got the scream out, you come back up and you wait for the next one to hit, because it's already on its way. Whether you or I realize it, there's another screamer coming. You said this takes the cake. There's another cake on the table. They're going to come take that, too.
They're taking all the cake.
Yeah.
They didn't clean the bakery clean out.
And they're not even going to leave us a scrap of a bagel.
No, they won't.
Andrew, you take care, bro.
You too, Bob.
Later.
Yep.
Bye. Oh, yeah, propose the development of innovative pilot and demonstration programs to increase the participation of faith-based and other community organizations. It's always the faith-based ones before we get to other community organizations. Because you know what? By the time faith-based organizations are done with the money, they ain't going to be nothing for any other community organization, sunshine. Oh, no, no. Oh, my God. You know, I always forget the dude's name. They asked him, you know, why do you rob banks? And he said, because that's where they keep the money. What would he say now? Why did you join the Fundy Church? Because that's where you get the money. I mean, I wish we could have a... all right, what do I have to do to get ordained Unitarian Universalist? I mean, can I... No, the Unitarians are nice, dear. They're not fundies. They're decent people.
No.
What do I got to do to become ordained? I mean, can somebody mail me the Holly Smoot certificate or something? Boom. You're somebody call me a cab. Okay, you're a cab. Somebody call me a priest. Okay, you're a priest. Because I want me a faith-based community initiative.
What was Guy Northern Exposure?
I want me a faith-based community initiative. And I don't want me just a little one either. I want a big one. Because all we got to do is take the money and tell them we'll pray. I mean, this is... You think I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. This is that medieval thing where before Lord Schwartner rode off to the fight for his lady fair, he stopped and dropped a bag of gold at the local cathedral and said, "Light me a candle every day." And the priest went, "You got it, bud. Hey, Bill, we got a bag of gold." This is that. All I got to do is get me ordained as some kind of preacher. Maybe Mark Perkle's Church of Reality. Get myself ordained and tell them that we will pray for every victim of every disaster. The sad thing is, I'm joking. There are people out there in Fundy land who have called their CPAs. Yeah, the Fundies have CPAs now. And they've said, I've got you on the line. You run the numbers. I'm calling the grant writer. And what we're going to do here is we're going to get us a faith-based pilot initiative program. And we're going to go, we're going to go pray for the Katrina victims. You think I'm kidding. You know, in some ways, this government is so hateful and so complex and so mean, but in other ways, it's so ignorant and simple. I mean, do you understand that this money that's going to come out of this program is part of the $40,000 debt that hangs around the neck of every baby that is born in America at this moment and every moment since George Bush destroyed our surplus? They're not giving away our money. They're giving away our money that they're borrowing in our names. Some woman has to die in a sweatshop knitting sweaters in Bangladesh, chained to a table, and the building collapses, and she dies, and people go to Walmart for a damn bargain so that there can be a faith-based community initiative. I don't have to put up with this. I can at least complain. Let's take a break. It's time for a Cup of Joe report. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. More and more polls are coming out showing how unpopular Mr. Bush is. He's hovering at just below 40% nationally, which is about as bad as any president can get that hasn't, say, killed someone in cold blood on national television. Though I'm sure Fox News has a special planned. Maybe Bush can execute one of the prisoners from Abu Ghraib personally, just like that guy in Eddie Adams' Pulitzer Prize-winning picture from Vietnam. Hey, the executioner was on our side, after all. Just like Saddam before he fell out of favor. Bush can even put on some kind of uniform for the occasion. He likes uniforms. Bill Clinton's poll numbers were up around the 60% area when the Republicans tried to kick him out of office for lying about a blowjob. They didn't give a damn about the polls any more then than they do now. Why should they have to? Their cult members will believe anything they tell them, and since so many of their districts, or should I say asylums, are gerrymandered just for them, they have no worries about getting reelected. And if all else fails, there's always Diebold. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad to know that the majority of the country is unhappy with Bush and the Republicans. Most Americans really do agree with liberal policies, at least they do when they find out they're being taken away. But we focus far too much time and energy worrying about the polls when the reality is that the Republicans still have the power to do what they want, when they want. Unless we can turn this discontent into viable political action, the polls are meaningless. or get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Hey, listen, tell me something, John. Do you guys eat a lot of mangoes down there?
Not enough to base a foreign policy on.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. We don't eat that many of them here either.
The United States is India's largest trading partner, and India is one of the United States' fastest-growing export markets. And oh, by the way, Mr. Prime Minister, the United States is looking forward to eating Indian mangoes.
That's right. It's March Mango Madness. Nukes for mangoes, mangoes for nukes. Join Bruce and I, John Fox, this weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network. Catch us at fourthestateradio.com or headonradionetwork.com.
A man who has the heart of a conservative, pickled in a jar on his desk. It's Bob Kincaid.
Home in the valley, home in the city.
Welcome back. I love it. I love it the way Joe says that he could dress up in a little uniform or something. Yeah, he could. Yeah, he does. And yeah, it's heartbreaking. The amount of stuff that the American people are subjected to, the fraud, active fraud that they're willing to perpetrate on us, and think that, oh, that sounds like a great idea. Is the church is going to ruin it? Good. Good God Almighty. It just blows my little mind right away. No, it really, it does. What do you do? How do you deal with that kind of mindset? You know, meanwhile, well, it all does kind of tie together, doesn't it? There's no meanwhile to it. This was in the top of the hour news, so ably done. Last night by our buddy Bruce Birch, and tonight by our buddy John Fox. Yeah, this from Raw Story. The Center for Public Integrity is releasing a report. I presume it says late Wednesday afternoon, so I presume it has been released. But according to the Center for Public Integrity, only $25 million of $2 billion in funding designated for states afflicted and affected by Katrina have been spent. You got that? Only $25 million out of $2 billion. And of course, that money was directed through where? Yeah, you'd take a moment, scratch your head. Yeah, that would be the Department of Homeland Security, which, of course, runs FEMA. And which, of course, will now be in charge of, what are we calling it here? A Center for Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. A Center for Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. Well, there's going to be lots of money for the Center for Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, isn't there? The shocking revelation that evacuees had been turned out while more than $1 billion remains in relief aid comes as President Bush visits New Orleans today. You know, one thing us, this is a digression, one thing we in the liberal media have got to stop doing is I'm not the boss man, I don't have the ink-stained finger, I'm not the editor, but I have suggested that we stop, and we will stop, we won't do it, in our newscasts that you hear at the top of the hour, we will not refer to that hateful little man as president. His name is George Bush, and that, by God, is all we're going to refer to him as. President, my left hind foot. Not mine. Not mine. Never. No, but the shocking revelation that evacuees have been turned out while more than $1 billion remains in relief aid comes as Bush visits New Orleans today for the 10th time since Hurricane Katrina struck. Billions of dollars designated for hurricane relief have gone unused by state governments. Those are questions I can't answer. Why? I can't answer it. I do know that Furious George was able to go to New Orleans today because he went to Crawford yesterday. Oh, yes, he did, didn't he? Certainly he did. Why did he go? He got on Air Force One and zippity-doo-dahed down to Crawford, Texas, because he couldn't be bothered to fill out an absentee ballot for Texas's Republican primary. Make you want to scream? We've talked on this program from time to time about just how much it costs to fire up dear old Air Force One and take dear leader, on vacation for another 6 freaking weeks. And yesterday, he got in his great big airplane and flew to Texas to cast a ballot. In a primary, no less. In a primary. Does that make you want to just eat dirt and run rabbits? It does me. So then they fired up Air Force One again, and he zipped. It's just a hop, skip, and a jump over to New Orleans, so he could stand with people in the debris fields and talk about how the public property has been cleaned up. Yeah, he did that. I don't understand my so-called fellow Americans anymore. The people who don't pay. I can't understand the people who don't pay attention to politics, who don't pay attention to civics, who don't pay attention to the political health of this once great nation. Watching a president waste a few $1 million to cast a ballot in a primary, and the so-called fiscal conservatives aren't screaming in the streets? I don't understand them anymore. I don't get them even a little bitty bit. Jenny Bergall, the report's author at the Center for Public Integrity, says, quote, "Just weeks after Hurricane Katrina struck the Gulf Coast, Congress scrambled to pass an emergency bill that gave states access to $2 billion to help low-income hurricane victims scattered across the country. But more than 5 months after the bill was signed into law, only 12 states, including Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, have taken Congress up on its offer." The report also notes, as of February 4th, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services records show that only $25.48 million of the $2 billion temporary assistance for needy families funds have been awarded. States' lack of interest in TANF funds has surprised federal officials and alarmed advocates for the poor, who say that low-income Katrina evacuees need all the help they can get. Large states like California, New York, Illinois, and Pennsylvania never requested any of the TANF contingency money for evacuees. Some border states like Arkansas decided not to ask for the money. The contingency money was requested by Florida, Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and Michigan. Huh? Alabama? Mississippi? Haley Barber? Buddy? Where are you? I don't understand this. Well, yeah, I do understand this. This goes back to our conversation with Jim Lardner. Because after all, this was temporary assistance to needy families, wasn't it? And there's no real hurry to help the needy. What? It's a chapter in Matthew where Yeshua talks about what will happen to the people who did not clothe the naked, who did not help the poor. And if you take that stuff seriously, our friend Tosh reminded me of this passage. If you take this kind of stuff seriously, that passage in Matthew is chilling in the extreme. So, you know, that's kind of where we are with temporary assistance for needy families. Okay, I'm trying to figure out who is on which line, Agnes. Could you help me here, honey?
Hold on.
Just a sec. Let's go to line one. Hey, this is Bob. You're head on. Who I got? Hello?
Are you looking to talk to Ed?
I'm looking to talk to Ed.
Okay, this is Ed.
Hey, Ed.
So, you know who I am.
Yes, I know who you are.
I'm Ed from WD-40.
Right. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Getting through the night, I think, if I can just do it without screaming.
I don't know too much about your show. I just talked to Clyde, and he told me to call you.
Oh, well, bless your heart. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks. I'm surprised I got on so easy. I don't know what I did right, but...
Well, you know, we're friendly. The way we run the program, we call it Conversation Radio, and we want to engage in the conversation.
Well, I wish I could listen to it where I'm at, out in the Midwest.
Oh, you can't.
We don't have that kind of stuff out here.
You got a computer?
Well, yeah, I do, and Clyde just told me how to do it, and you see... I'm not a very smart man. I have a real tough time figuring my computer out.
Well, this is so easy. It's not even funny. All you gotta do is go to whiterosesociety.org, look for my archive, and the next thing you know, you're listening.
Well, because I tried emailing you the other day, and for some reason I couldn't figure my way through your site. So I tried to send you an email, and for some reason it came back to me.
Well,
I did something wrong.
Yeah, it's easy. Bob@headonradio.com.
But I'm working with Agnes, and she's going to help me out.
Absolutely.
She already promised me that.
Yeah, she's good people, Agnes is.
She's great people. You're lucky to have her.
She tells me that every day.
So what's going on good tonight?
You know, Ed, we're having a low-grade aneurysm over the fact that millions of American taxpayer dollars are going to be given out to an organization that's newly been created by the White House called the Center. Where is it? Okay. Yeah, the Center for Faith-Based and Community Initiatives under the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay, and is this supposedly money that's going to go to the Katrina victim?
No.
Or a percentage of it anyway?
Yeah, this is like a few million dollars that's going to go to some church to pray for Katrina victims.
Oh, well, yeah, well, that's going to help if we pray for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what's going to help is, see, for one, had this happened in Houston,
this
conversation wouldn't be carried on.
Oh, no, it would be a wildly different circumstance.
Yes, indeed it would. See, you got to remember that you got a bunch of black people in Louisiana that weren't going to vote for him or none of his buddies in the first damn place.
You're right.
And since he has nothing to gain by taking care of these people, he's not going to take care of these people.
Well, he did such a lovely job of not taking care of these people that a lot of these people got to die, Ed.
I realize this.
We're talking about deliberate indifference to human suffering.
But they didn't vote for him.
Right.
Had he had the majority there, something would have been done. And it's simple. It's pretty simple what's going on.
Well, you'll notice they
could care less about us middle-aged black men. And, by the way, I'm not a middle-aged black man. I play one on my column.
Okay, I understand, Ed.
But he could care less about people that are not going to care less about him.
Well, you'll notice that they do a pretty doggone good job getting down to Florida and passing out money like matchbooks, you know, when one hits there.
Well, yeah. That's because Florida, he's got a chance because he's got a little brother that's going to rig elections for him.
You know, but he's out of the election gig now, Ed. What do you? And you know, one of the things that people on our side, you know, I think there's some of us, and I'm occasionally one of them, Ed, who is scared to death he's going to figure out a way to be president for a third term.
No, that's not what it's about at all.
Okay.
Okay. To me, what it's about is, and I don't know if you read my column today.
Today I didn't get to it, but
okay, well,
tell me about it, please.
If you would have, what I was writing about was the Dubai deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Republicans know that there's no way in hell that that's going through. But by pushing that through, and him, since his poll numbers are going down so fast, and he's going to go down in history as being, if not the worst, one of the worst presidents this country has ever seen, he's got nothing to lose.
And so just Katie bar the door and devil take the hindmost?
No, they don't want, they're not going to let an Arab country take over our ports. But by doing this the way they did, what's going to happen is you're going to have certain Republicans like Santorum and certain ones that are in dogfights to get reelected.
Right.
They're going to be able to stand up and say, damn it, I voted against that. I didn't want to see that.
I'm bold and independent.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, you know.
And then the Republicans that are in a Republican stronghold like I live in,
and you are,
they're going to be able to say, because they came up with this so-called 45-day waiting period, and they're going to re-evaluate the situation. When this time came, what they were going to do is they're going to say, well, we decided that it's better that we don't turn this over to an Arab country. Okay, and in my column I said, and this is just the voices in my head telling me this, that they're playing games. And what they want to do is try to make people think that these people are on their side. And by doing that, Santorum can say no. And the ones that are in the stronghold, as long as they don't have a vote, they don't have to vote with him. So they can't make them look bad in the stronghold.
And in other words, to quote another one of our listeners in another red state, Tennessee, it's all wrestling.
They are strictly looking at the 2006 elections. I don't care what anybody says.
That's all. Yeah, I think you're right. I absolutely think you're right, because it's so easy for them to say.
I want to urge you to read my column. I wrote a
not just
short
me.
Piece about the Dubai deal.
Not just me. Everybody listening. And it's at WD40.com. Is it still listed there in the main list?
Yeah, and if you look at Inside Ed's Head, it's strictly about this is a, you know, I said something about child psychology works, and goddammit, it does.
Yeah.
It works good, and it works best on adults if you think about it.
The simple ones especially.
That's right. Okay, so now, if the Republican brains, because we all know that W ain't making none of the decisions and never has.
No, no.
Okay, he's just a puppet.
Right.
Okay, everybody knows this. Anybody that follows it at all knows he's just a puppet. And I think mostly it's his old man.
Really? Right? Because, you know, I mean, his old man said, yeah, son, I wouldn't be going into Iraq like you're planning to do. You know, it was George H.W. and Brent Scowcroft said, Dad, this ain't the thing we would have done.
I think he says that because he's saying it in front of a camera.
Okay, well, I mean, that's reasonable, Ed.
personally, I think he's trying to prove a point, and he's trying to make his legacy look better by saying stuff like that. When it gets right down to it, I mean, because if you think about it, back when he was with Ronald Reagan, who was his, one of his strongest allies in the Middle East?
Saddam.
Damn it, it was Iraq.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, we've got
Which side of the fence is this guy going to get on?
Oh, I think he likes it right where he is in the middle.
You're damn right. And he's telling his boy what to do. And his boy is, I mean, we all know that W is not, he's a smart man. He's got to be a smart man because you don't get to be elected president not being a smart man. I don't think he's as dumb as he plays.
Well, yeah, there are those who would say it takes a genius to play a moron.
And that could be what it is. I don't know. I can't say. But what I do think is the Republican plan on this divide deal just got debacled today by Charles Schumer.
Really?
Because Schumer put into, and I'm not exactly sure what bill it was, but he added, let's make a vote on the divide deal. If you want to pass this bill, you're going to have to vote on the divide deal.
Yeah, they did that today, and the Republicans blocked the vote.
You damn right they did.
Sure.
Because they don't want to vote on it.
No, they just want to talk about it. They don't want to be compelled to stand for anything.
They want to use this for the 2006 election. They need to have people like Santorum and those guys that are in a dogfight,
yeah,
that are fixing to lose their ass, be able to stand up and say, no, I'm against that. But when push comes to shove, they didn't, like I said, they don't want the guys like Congressman King in my district to have to vote for it because that's going to erode his base.
Right.
Because, like I said in my column, nearly 100% of the people in this country are against this deal.
Yeah, I mean,
care if they're Republican or Democrat, they're against it. Okay, but if guys like Congressman King have to vote for it, that's going to take away from his base because people are going to say, no, I don't like that deal. So they do not want to vote. What's going to happen?
Yeah, they just want to talk about it, in other
words. In the end, they want to talk about it, and then in the end, they want to say, no, we decided this is not the way the country wants to go. We want to go this way, but they're going to use that. They're going to try to use it to their advantage. And in my column, I said that I'm not smart enough to figure out a way to make this a situation that Democrats can turn into their favor, but Senator Schumer did it.
Well, you see, we talk a lot about what the so-called centrist Democrats do, Ed, and the smart money in Washington says opposing the Dubai ports deal does not favor Democrats. When the entire country doesn't want this deal, I don't know where these people get their ideas. I don't know maybe they serve absinthe in the bars that these Democratic strategists go to. I don't know. I mean, because I can't get in touch with that mindset.
Well, all I can figure is since 1996, we've been getting our ass kicked from a guy named Newt.
Well,
so,
yeah, or Tom, you know, DeLay.
Until we get some people in there, they're going to start thinking in the future instead of the present. Because that's what we've been doing. We're busy laughing at W when he does all these stupid things and says all this stupid stuff. And we're not looking ahead like they have been. And what they're doing on this Dubai deal is they're looking ahead. This has nothing to do. I'm pretty positive. And like I said, I'm not a smart man, but.
Well, you sound pretty perspicacious to me.
I can't imagine any way in the world that the Republican Party wants an Arab country running six of our major ports.
Well,
I can't imagine it.
No, well, Ed, you know, you've got the facts behind you, buddy, because we had that story, 3 weeks ago now, the big psychological study that was released. It was, you know, it was unbiased. It wasn't liberal. It wasn't conservative. It was just neutral data that was taken from volunteers, and people who self-identified themselves as Republicans showed themselves to be racists at a much higher degree than people who self-identified themselves as liberals. So, you know, on that ground alone, the Republicans have got the mainstream ones, the ones that go to the fundy churches and stuff. They have got, this has got to just be sticking in their craw. Brown
right,
people
but,
running our
like
courts.
Like I said, Bob, even racists don't want this. I mean, if you think about it, even racists don't want it. And I don't think it's ever their intention to let it get that far. They're using it for November, and that's all it's about.
Well,
when push comes to shove, they're going to tell United Arab Emirates, sorry, we can't do this. But in the meantime, they're going to use this or try to use it to their advantage in guys like that loser Santorum.
And the scary thing is what they will also turn around and use the silence of centrist sissy Democrats against us. You know, the Democrats wouldn't come out and fight, you know, we're the Republican Party. We stand for national security. La, 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 la. We've heard it for five years.
Well, if they stand so much for national security.
Well, no, we know they don't.
If they stand so much for national security, how come the worst attack on this soil of ours was committed while W was in office? It wasn't Bill Clinton.
Yeah, that's the question I can't answer either, Ed.
It wasn't anybody else. In fact, the people that attacked the World Trade Center when Bill Clinton was in office were caught, tried, and convicted.
And they are rotting in prison even as we speak. Yep.
So now, how can anybody say that they are... I think they're just causing more...
Well, they're in. What it boils down to, Ed, and we got a roll here real quick. What it boils down to is they are incompetent. I mean, you talk about them being a little bit simple. They're also a little bit incompetent. They're a lot incompetent. Who are we trying to kid, Ed? I hope you'll figure out how to. And I know you will. How to bring the show up, because I think you'll enjoy it. And I hope we'll hear from you again. We got to hit the break though.
All right, hey, tell Agnes we love her, okay?
All right, I sure will. She knows. All right, bye now.
Bye.
And we do have the break coming up. When we come back, more of your phone calls at 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. You know me. I'm Bob Kincaid. Bring the heat like the month of June. Crank the volume, make the bass go boom. Wild out like we some wild baboons. We go bananas to the tune. I wanna throw bows, give me elbow room. When I'm out my cocoon, I'm ready to consume. Let's hit the saloon, cause it's a holiday.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Head On Radio News, I'm John Fox. Republicans in Congress stopped a vote today on George Bush's Dubai ports deal. Capitulating to the White House, the Republicans stopped a vote on an amendment that would have blocked the national security giveaway. Democrats say they won't stop until they have forced an up or down vote on selling American national security to a country with proven ties to Al-Qaeda. George Bush made his 10th trip to the Gulf Coast in 84 days Wednesday.
Bush met crews who were demolishing homes in the lower Ninth Ward. He praised them and claimed that, quote, the vast majority of debris on public property has been removed, unquote. Bush promised that what he calls, quote, my government, unquote, will do what's necessary to clean up the mess his negligence helped to cause. In a related story, only $25 million of the $2 billion in aid for Gulf cleanup and reconstruction has been spent. That's the word from the new report released this evening by the Center for Public Integrity. Evacuees have been turned out of their temporary shelter while more than $1 billion remains untouched. More than 8,000 American soldiers, sailors, and Marines have deserted since the start of George Bush's war against Iraq. That's according to Pentagon records as of September 2005. Authorities in Iraq discovered 24 bodies Wednesday. 18 men were found in western Baghdad with their hands tied behind their backs. They had been strangled. Six people also died in car bombings. U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Peter Pace has recently said that the massive wave of death is being caused by what he terms as a relatively small group of people. In a stunning example of brutal irony, George Bush's budget calls for funding cuts to the Christopher and Dana Reeve Paralysis Resource Center. The 2007 budget didn't decrease funding for the center, it eliminated it altogether. The center was the dream of Dana Reeve, the widow of actor Christopher Reeve. Mrs. Reeve died yesterday at the age of 44. The Reeve Center is just one of many social or medical programs that were destroyed in Bush's pro-war budget. North Korea is playing with fire. The isolated peninsular country fired a pair of short-range surface-to-air missiles Wednesday near the border with China. Even more unsettling is the report from Japan that it's uncertain whether the missiles were launched intentionally or by mistake. The Roman Catholic Church announced Wednesday that more than 3.5% of its priests in Ireland are pedophiles. 102 of Ireland's priests are suspected of having preyed upon 350 children since 1940. The study only related to priests in Dublin. Only 8 of the priests were punished under the law. There has been no comment from Pope Benedict, who was a Nazi anti-aircraft gunner in his youth. George Bush's plan to cut $36 billion from Medicare ran into stiff opposition on Wednesday from dozens of his fellow Republicans in the House of Representatives. Bush promised trimming $36 billion over 5 years and $105 billion over 10 for Medicare, the federal health plan for America's elderly, mostly by slowing payments to hospitals, nursing homes, and similar health care providers. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. Reuters reports, Ken Lay, former chief executive of Enron Corporation, repeatedly lied to investors about the company, portraying it as financially sound even when it was spiraling towards bankruptcy in 2001. It was what Mr. Lay was saying, what the company was saying. I was trying to keep up the deception as well, said Fastow in his second day of testimony in the fraud conspiracy trial of Lay and Skilling. It was a lie. From Baghdad, armed men in police uniforms seized dozens of Iraqi private security guards from the firm's compound on Wednesday, but officials contradicted each other over whether they were arrested or kidnapped. Three of the most senior officials in the Interior Ministry insisted no raid was authorized by the company in Baghdad. Police raided the company after a complaint from a corporate client dissatisfied with the firm's security services. But Major General Mohammed Al-Hassan, the ministry's head of operations, in a statement, the Interior Ministry is not involved in any way in this arrest. The confusion was not unusual in matters relating to Iraqi security forces. The U.S.-backed Iraqi government has admitted that some units have operated beyond its control. U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has accused Iran of sending Revolutionary Guard forces into Iraq, his latest accusation of Iran meddling in the war. They are currently putting people into Iraq which do things that are harmful to the future of Iraq, Mr. Rumsfeld said. An Australian frigate was involved in a tense standoff with six Iranian gunboats while guarding Iraq's oil platforms on the Gulf Saturday. In Internet news, it would seem that the Department of Homeland Security is demanding that Doug Thompson, proprietor of Capitol Hill Blue's hosting company, investigate what Doug Thompson, proprietor of Capitol Hill Blue, has been up to, but he is absolutely forbidden from telling Doug Thompson that this is going on. Mr. Thompson is quoted as saying, I turned the letter over to my lawyer and told him to send the following message. F you, strong letter to follow. That's News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. I'm John Fox.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Okay. So it's almost 5 minutes past the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's our Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. And I think we've had just about all the faith-based initiative we can stand for one night. Billions of dollars for a brand new Center for Faith-Based Initiatives inside the Department of Homeland Security. Oh, God almighty. Let's go to the phones. Peter's been waiting. Hey, Peter, you're Head On. How you doing?
Hey, Bob, I'm doing great. Yeah, that faith-based initiative is just another way to divert money from AIDS research and condoms and birth control. It's just a huge joke.
Well, I keep thinking, of, you know, I see these faith-based initiatives, Peter, and I think of the, oh, who was it, the Bible, what were they, Bible salesmen in Paper Moon?
Oh, I love that. Yeah, yeah, they did. It would stick the name in the front and then do a con.
Yeah, this is that.
Yeah, this is that. I wanted to tell you about an article Vanity Fair is about to publish.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. They did an extensive interview with Abramoff, and he's talking. And, you know, this comes right at the time that the Republicans are desperate to cover up the spying and any links with Abramoff. But I have a couple of things I want to give you here, about three or four people that were Abramoff discussed. I'm going to save the best for last. On Gingrich, Gingrich said he wouldn't know the man if he fell across him and hadn't seen him in 10 years. Abramoff says in the interview, I have more pictures of Newt Gingrich than I have of my wife. And then regarding Tom DeLay, who also denies knowing him, Abramoff said that he admired Tom DeLay and his family from the very first time they met, that he would sit and talk with Tom DeLay about the Bible and about opera and about golf, and it goes on and on and on, et cetera, et cetera. Now, then on Miss Melman, according to
Miss Melman, yes.
Miss Melman, of course, also denies knowing him, but Abramoff clearly explains that Melman's been over to his home and had Sunday dinner with his family. And and Melman's even offered to pick up some of Abramoff's tabs at various restaurants. But the best, the one that takes the cake, is George Bush. Now, George Bush is aware that in the past, Abramoff was a weightlifter.
Yeah.
Okay. So in a conversation that Bush had with Abramoff, Bush says, "What you benching, buff guy?"
Buff guy?
Buff guy. Now, I have heard some gay pickup lines in my time. Everything from got a match to what size shoe do you wear? But this pegs the gaydometer way off the charts.
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner.
Does anybody not get this? Obviously, without question, Bush is imagining the man naked.
You know, ew.
Well, ew is right, but you just don't go buff guy without some sort of mental image going, do you?
You know, we're breaking into a show tune or something. Well, I see, Peter, there are so many things that I forget about Bush, but there are a few things that do hang around on the neurons and synapses that I haven't thus far corrupted. And one of them is the exchange in Mexico. Do you remember the exchange in Mexico when the dear leader was down there for some sort of screw the working man summit that he's all the time going to?
I'm drawing a blank.
Okay, well, the Prime Minister of Canada was down there, too. And the Prime Minister of Canada had an assistant whose name was, I believe, Scott.
Yeah.
And Scott McClellan was with dear leader.
Yes.
And I guess Vicente Fox or whomever it was sort of hanging out on the periphery of the conversation. But there were reporters present. I think there were microphones.
Yes.
And dear leader looks at the Prime Minister's assistant and says, "Hey, well, your name's Scott too, huh? You're a pretty man."
Oh, no.
Yeah, we got a Scott works for me, too, but he ain't near as pretty as you are. He sure are a pretty man. You know, this was straight out of the road company of Deliverance, for God's sakes.
Oh, he did.
Sure, yes, he did. Sure do you know, got a pretty mouth. Yeah.
I used to think that Gannon was Scotty's client, or vice versa, but now, you know, I'm beginning to think it was Bush.
Oh, you know, there's a lot of stuff that just goes back and back and back. There's that persistent rumor about Bush, and they were pals in their what was it, their wayward youth or their indiscreet youth. They were pals, and he became mayor of Knoxville. This guy, I can't even remember the guy's name, became mayor of Knoxville. And then he went on to become appointed by Bush ambassador to Poland or some such.
Well, if anyone ever sees me type "what you benching, buff guy" in the chat room, I'm up to no good.
You know, I can think of a couple of the little trolls that have been cruising the chat room. That
Bob, I have two quick questions for you. Before,
sure.
One, you guys played a song last night that I have got to know the name of it. The lyrics were something like "I need a friend, don't look for a stranger." Who was that? Who did that?
Agnes, you got anything for me there? It'll take it. We can go and check it.
If it comes up, I'd love to know. If you need a friend, don't look for a stranger. And the other one is, if someone wanted to Skype you, do they just dial that Skype telephone number? The what is it? The 304?
Oh, no. The standard telephone line rings on the standard telephone.
Okay.
Now you can Skype a number with Skype credits. However, if you just want to come into the computer, I'm listed as Bob Kincaid.
Okay, is that one word?
No, I think it's two.
Okay. I just wanted to add that to the posting because Skyping came up the other night from, I think it was Japan Man being so far away. I think that he was...
Yeah, if you go to Skype and you use the search function and you type in Bob Kincaid, I imagine I'll be the first and probably only Bob Kincaid Skype address that comes up.
Right, and for sure you're the only one in West Virginia because I ran it once before.
Yeah, and Agnes says she knows what it was.
What was it? What was it? I got to know. I'm dying to know.
When in Rome, Promise.
It is. It's When in Rome, Promise. Is the band name When in Rome? The band's name is When in Rome, and the name of the song is Promise.
Is Promise?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, that is a great song. I just really like that, When in Rome, and it's called Promise.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to track it down. Can't live without it. I mean, that's date music. Watcha?
Well, you know, I mean, don't.
Guy.
let me make sure the Recording Industry Association of America isn't listening. I'll send it to you.
Oh, my God. Bonus night. I win the prize. Am I the 10,000th caller? Dude.
We share.
That's right. You're the 10,000th caller to Head On.
Thank you, Bob. And Sarah will appreciate it, too. Sarah loves your music, too.
Oh, well, thank you both so much.
Okay.
You know, it's such a bonus having the whole gang there chatting away in the Tom Hartman chat room. It's a blast. And, you know, we do appreciate Tom's good graces in allowing us to be there.
Yes, it's very kind of him to leave it 24 hours a day. And depending upon what time it is, there are various people that flock around various shows, but certainly you are the 7 to 10 guy. There's no question.
Well, that's wonderful.
Okay.
I'm thrilled and honored that that folks, you know, like to spend the time while we're rambling along.
Okay.
All right. You take care, Peter.
Good night to both.
Bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Huh, I tell you what, Agnes. As soon as you're done, let's go ahead and take the break and then come back. Had a couple of people. Well, if you want to call in, fine. 877, the number, 4 Head On. 877-443-2366 is the number. Pretty easy, isn't it? And again, the email address, Bob, B-O-B, at headonradio.com. And finally, if you want to come in via Skype, go to the search function, Bob Kincaid. And I just betcha you'll see it. This is Head On, and I am Bob Kincaid.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you know, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a
It's really, really smart.
We're a nice little Petri dish here in Vermont because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
A liberal light in the conservative darkness. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Mama Leone left a note on the door. She said, Sonny, move out to the country.
All right, we're back. Let's see. Well, I told you the phone number. You've already got all of that stuff. An email from our good friend David in Nashville, Tennessee, about a little something going down in Vermont. And I was reminded of this, our sister program that you heard the program promo for their Homebodies with Rama and Grace that airs Sunday nights from 8 to 10 here on the Head On Radio Network. They're out of Vermont. Looks like there's some good thinking going on in Vermont, according to the Associated Press. In five Vermont communities, a centuries-old tradition of residents gathering in town halls to conduct local business became a vehicle to send a message to Washington. And it's a hell of a message, too. Impeach the president. An impeachment article approved by a paper ballot. Oh, they still do those? Wow. Good on you, Vermont. An impeachment article approved by a paper ballot listen to the margin, by a margin of 121 to 29 in Newfane on Tuesday. Boy, I hope I'm pronouncing it. Newfane, I mean, is there another way? Probably. Newfane on Tuesday calls on Vermont's lone member of the U.S. House, Independent Representative Bernie Sanders, to file articles of impeachment against President Bush, alleging that he misled the nation into the Iraq War and engaged in illegal domestic spying. Newfane Select Board member Dan DeWalt said, "It absolutely affects us locally. It's our sons and daughters, our mothers and fathers, who are dying in the war in Iraq." Let's go to Wayne. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Okay, I'm confused.
Uh-oh.
Didn't you say earlier that somebody blocked a vote on the port deal?
That was the news at the time we were preparing the top of the hour newscast, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm looking at CNN.
Yeah.
And they're saying that a House committee, the House Appropriations Committee, voted 62-2 to block the controversial deal that would allow Dubai Ports World to operate some terminals at U.S. ports.
Yeah, that's a separate deal. There was a There was an amendment offered to, I think, the budget bill or some appropriations bill
Katrina
today.
Yeah, Katrina bill.
Was stopped by the Republicans earlier today. So now the Appropriations Committee has acted?
Yes. I mean, this is posted at 9:01
Wow.
Today.
Wow.
Says Representative Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, he said. Yeah, he said he was going to do it.
He looks a lot better here.
See, you know, you can't get past. We can't.
Well,
get,
you can. I mean, how can you? I don't. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I if I'd been able to find it, you know, the minute I would have had a sound. Dean, you know.
Yeah, right. Or it's just for the kids or something.
Yeah.
but anyway, it says Jerry Lewis helped to attach the Porch proposal to a bill funding the war in Iraq and hurricane relief. So. I mean, I'm sure it has to go to the Senate now, too, but...
Well, that's just the committee in the House, too.
Yeah. But, right, well, exactly.
So that means that now if it got reported out of committee on a 62-2 margin, then you know that, I mean, it has to be voted on in the House. Now, I'm not sure. Maybe that's the vote that they stopped on the floor of the House today.
I don't know.
I mean, some of this stuff can get fairly convoluted pretty quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm easily... convoluted or whatever.
Ain't we all?
Well, the way these guys operate, I mean, well, that's part of their game, too.
Yeah, you think you're voting no, and you turn out and you vote no, and it meant you voted yes?
Yeah,
hey.
Exactly. But I thought I voted no. Oh, no, you don't
well, you
understand.
You did vote no, and that meant yes.
Yes.
What are you, silly? Well, you know, I know you're in you spent your fair share of time in Vermont, Wayne.
Oh, I did. 18 years.
I am proud of your former brother and sister Vermonters in five towns there. This idea of five Vermont communities passing town meeting. I wish we had a town meeting in Fayette County, West Virginia. You know that?
Well, I do. We need town meetings all over the country.
Yeah. Five town meetings in Vermont, the passing articles of impeachment against George Bush to the tune of, well, let's see, you know where Newfane is?
Yep.
Newfane passed one yesterday, 121-29,
yep.
Demanding that Bernie Sanders file articles of impeachment against George Bush.
Yes, that's soon to be Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
Yes. He's, well, I know him personally, you know. Drank a beer with him many years ago.
Well, I appreciate a congressman who knows how to do the 12-ounce curl.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was pretty good at it in his day. He was always, Vermont, you know, if it wasn't so damn cold, if winter didn't last so long.
Yeah, I mean, what? There's two seasons in Vermont, like dead of winter and 4th of July, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or they say, you know, 9 months of winter and 3 months of bad sledding. But very progressive people, you know. Well, you know, here's progressive. I mean, a state that doesn't allow billboards.
Yeah, that's kind of cool, too. Yeah, the other four towns, Wayne, Brookfield, Dummerston, Marlboro, and Putney.
Putney, I know. The rest of them, you know, there's a lot of little towns, just like West Virginia. A lot of, well, it's a lot, there are a lot of similarities. I mean, in the terrain, and they're both beautiful. You know, only Vermont's smart enough to have a bottle bill and,
yeah,
you know, keep billboards off of highways and stuff like that. But
I gotta see that place sometime.
Well, you know, I'll be going this summer. I know that.
Yeah, I'll be the dude on the side of the road with his thumb out.
Well, you know, listen, I bet you look for cans, you get enough money to buy a ticket. There's a lot of people that do it. That's why they don't lay on the side of the road, you know. But mostly it's because people don't throw nickels and dimes out the car window.
Yeah, there's gold in them there cans.
Yeah, they save them, buddy. They save them. So, but anyway, this Dubai thing is interesting, and, you know, we'll see how many games they play with this. But.
Well, I think our buddy Ed from WD40.com has a cogent point. The Republicans don't want it, but they do want it to stick around long enough so that they can say, I am a bold and independent man, and I am not necessarily the body slave of George W. Bush.
I couldn't disagree with that. You know, I mean, these people are evil, and, well, they're capable of anything.
Yeah, they are
capable of anything.
And I just don't I don't understand our party. We've got this is the pitch that's like coming easy over the center of the plate, and all you got to do is hit it out of the park.
I know.
And we've got the so-called leadership of these sissy centrist Democrats going, don't swing, don't swing.
Right. Oh, it might look bad.
All you got to do is stand there with the bat on your shoulders, and then
wait for the next one.
Wait for the Republicans to screw up.
And they don't. And I think a lot of them think you get four strikes.
Yeah. Well, that's probably true. I mean, it's one of those behind the curve. So far, we think we're on the straight road kind of thing.
There you go, buddy.
Oh, Wayne, good to hear from you, brother.
Okay.
And thanks for the update. I got to sort this out now.
Well, I that's why I called you. I need you to sort it out because I'm confused. I look for you for guidance, Bob.
Man, are you in a mess?
Well, some people would say that.
Take care, brother.
Okay, pal.
All right, bye. Later. Talking about the Vermont town votes. The people that listen to this program would go to town meetings. I don't know, I don't know about other people if they would or not.
Yeah, but Bob, they always get the pitchforks.
Pitchforks and torches on the way to the town meeting are okay too. Let's go on straight back to the phones. Our good buddy David in Nashville is with us. Hey, David, you're head on.
Well, good evening, Bob. What a nice moment coming in the house. I've had a long day, and I fire up the old computer walking in, and I do a couple of things, and suddenly there's Bob Kincaid saying, and here's an email from our friend David. And I go, huh, what? How? Wait a minute, I haven't been home. How did I email?
But you did.
It was earlier. And yes, that just warmed my black heart, by golly, when I saw that five little birds talked about it amongst themselves, face to face, neighbor to neighbor, and said to their only representative, or in the House of Representatives, start the paperwork. Get that chimp out of there. I thought that was especially wonderful. There weren't any Secret Service agents telling them they couldn't wear a T-shirt.
Nope.
There weren't any Karl Rove lackeys running around saying, are you now or have you ever been a Democrat? Oh, I'm sorry, you can't come to this rally. Folks got together, spoke their mind, and said, he's hurt us. The generations before us, the generations after us, and generations that haven't been born, he's hurting us. Get rid of him.
And, I love the way that it went about, that it came about, David. There's a paragraph in this story that says, in Newfane, the impeachment item came at the end of a roughly four-hour meeting that was devoted mostly to the local affairs of the town of 1600, located in southeastern Vermont. Among the other items discussed was whether the town should fix some of its 100-year-old sidewalks. I love the prospect of that. And next up on the agenda, we want to fix the sidewalks. And by the way, shall we impeach George Bush? Let's do the vote at the same time. Fix the sidewalks and impeach Bush. Everybody say aye. Aye. Okay. Impeach Bush. Fix the sidewalks. Next.
Yes, they did the things they normally do. Probably somebody set the agenda days or, who knows, weeks before. And, well, now we've taken care of the local stuff. The garbage will be picked up. The sidewalks will be fixed. The new second grade teacher will be hired. And now we'll talk about that fellow in Washington.
I think in Vermont they still use phrases like blackguard, don't they?
I'm sure their command of English taps into a time several generations ago. I've got plenty hard nosed King's English, no pun intended, folks based on the way they really intended 1776 to be. And all of those events, I love these guys that are so dead wrong when they say, we've got to go back to what was going on with the real framers of the real framers of the Constitution built room to grow and change into that document.
Yeah, they kind of did. Yeah.
They encouraged it. They expected it.
they would have demanded it. Can you imagine?
Well, why would they put an amendatory process into the document if they didn't expect it to change, for God's sakes?
Thank you. Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner. Get that man a toaster.
Exactly. You know, but I do this a little further down in the article, you get this remarks from a man named Greg Record. Greg Record, a local justice of the peace, criticized the amount of time and attention such advisory votes get. We spend more time on these things than on a $1 million budget item, said Record, who said the town is made up of people from the far left. Now, see, that's the way it always goes. You know, last night we're talking about everybody being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. Next thing you know, I'm a communist. And now, if you want to get rid of a poisonous man who's killing our country, they're on the far left.
And the vote was 120 to 20 something.
129 to 21.
Yeah, right. Far left. Uh huh. Oh sure.
Yeah,
that's like Rumsfeld saying yesterday or today, whichever it was. You know, there are all these errors in the media's perception of the war in Iraq. They're saying, oh, I'm sorry, I'm Rumsfeld now. The war in Iraq. They're saying that it's not a revolution. It's not a civil war. It's not all these. These errors are all in the same direction. They're all on the same side. Hey, Rummy, I got a newsflash for you, partner. When all the errors are on one side, it means you don't get it, partner.
Yeah. And, you know, by the way, if it's so nice and lovely and wonderful outside the green zone, let's give Rummy let's give him the same crappy body armor that we give to our soldiers. And let him take a whistling walk down West Main Baghdad and see how wonderful it is.
He loves to stand up. Let's give him that cheap body armor and tell him, go for a walk.
Yeah.
But it is. The thing in Vermont is just so heartening that, and I'm sorry, that's a pretty close to the ground. That's not a walk. You know, that's not San Francisco. That's not Haight-Ashbury. And I don't know if the way that article translated to you, did the picture of the town meeting in, what was it, Finskane?
New Thane.
Did the picture of those nice folks come through?
Yeah, I'm not looking at a bunch of lefties.
You're not looking at a bunch of teenagers either.
No, there's some significant blue hair going on in there, David, and non-hair.
I'm not so sure those ladies bother with the blue hair. It's gray, or it's the way God gave it to them. You know, either way, it's fine with them. You know, a little. They were sitting there in the front row with shawls.
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at them. Yep, no doubt about it.
These are not wild-eyed. These are not the flimbo liberals or echo terrorists or feminazis or any of the rest of these horrid cliches that we've let them paint us with. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I could be dipped by the heel in turpentine and the paint would still be. And there's several layers on me. But, you know, there is kind of a downside to this article, David.
Uh-oh. And that would be?
Bernie Sanders issued a statement after the New Thane vote saying that although the Bush administration, quote, has been a disaster for our country and a number of actions that he has taken may very well not have been legal, unquote. You know what's coming, don't you? Given the reality that the Republicans control the House and the Senate, quote, it would be impractical to talk about impeachment. Now,
we got to get over that.
I mean, I keep a copy both in video form of the film and in book form of that marvelous tome of To Kill a Mockingbird at hand at all times. It means that much to me. I go back and reread it once a month or so. And I always turn to that soliloquy, that monologue that Atticus delivers to Jem and Scout. And you can always hear the stentorian tones of Gregory Peck's voice not doing a South Alabama accent when he says, "Sometimes there are fights that we must fight, that we know we are going to lose. But we must fight them because fighting them is the right thing to do." Can somebody, I mean, I like Bernie Sanders. Can somebody just like maybe scan that in or something and get it to his office? Because sometimes, you know, I know the Republicans control both houses of Congress. You know it too, David.
Yeah, it's not news. I'm sorry. That nice fellow just needs to realize what would be the most common wood? What would be the most common tree in Vermont? Anyway, some nice piece of down wood of just about the right size in stick form should go right between the backs of his legs.
And yeah.
He should be goosed forward by the voters of that state.
And then there are the words of the chairman of the Vermont Republican Party, which I didn't even know was allowed to exist. He said Sanders should reject the resolution, quote,
"We should not be impeaching presidents just because we disagree with them."
That's not the point, is it? We don't want to impeach George Bush because we disagree with him. We want to impeach George Bush because he's a little freaking war criminal.
That's exactly right. You disagree with a president because he wants to put $400 billion into defense when you think it should be $375 billion. That's a disagreement.
Yeah.
Killing 2,500 of ours and 100,000 of theirs for a lie, that's a little bit more than a disagreement.
And the thing is, the Republicans, David, are going to have to come to terms with the fact that they created this standard. They are the ones who declared that semen-stained blue dresses are grounds for impeachment. And that is a bar. I mean, you know, if you're playing hokey pokey, you can't get under the bar. But that bar, because it's so damn low, but you can step over it and not trip. That is a mighty low standard that they created with Bill Clinton. And if George Bush has not met that decreased standard of impeachment, it used to be high crimes and misdemeanors in the Constitution, but by virtue of the Republicans in Congress, by virtue of their actions, they lowered that high crimes and misdemeanors down to oral sex.
They lowered it to lying to your wife as a married man that didn't want to endure the argument. Bush was so far over that, it was like his flyover in Air Force One of the Katrina disaster. He was so far above it, most of the Republicans couldn't see it. I'm sorry, I heard that integrity, I heard that accountability nonsense over oral sex by a man, requested by a man in power from a woman that wanted to be around people in power. I heard that rap. I listened to that for so darn long. It was just a nightmare to hear that over and over. And now then, we've got a man that has killed 2,500 American service people unnecessarily to get nothing done. I would have a completely different view if those people had been lost, if those service people had been lost in Afghanistan, 300, 400, 600 yards behind Osama bin Laden, fighting constant hand-to-hand combat, I could feel differently about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They stopped tracking the guy that did it to go get the guy that offended them 12 years earlier.
And it's worse than that. It's like John Murtha said CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday. He said, "I go to the hospitals and I talk to these guys and they don't have a mission. I look at these guys at the hospital and I say, 'What was your mission?' And they say, 'Our mission was finding IEDs.'" And he said, "What that means when they say our mission was IEDs, we go walking around poking the ground with a stick and we find the IED by blowing it up and it blows us up at the same time. That's not a mission." That's stupid. That's stupidity. That's craziness.
The short version of that is if you are a prize fighter, you are saying my mission is to go find the bloody nose.
Yeah.
What the hell is that about?
My mission's to find out if my jaw's made of glass.
Precisely. But this is all brought to us, Bob. This is all brought to us by the man, Mr. Bush, who told us all he had seen a fellow's soul, and he knew by looking in his eyes, and I still think there was a different look in both their eyes.
Oh, me too.
You know, he stares at Putski and he says, "That's a great guy. I can work with him. He's a great fellow." That's the George Bush method, you know.
Well, that's, yeah, this
football, is... crackpot, who knows what process, and he's in bed. Oops, shouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, see, this is where we start playing the theme from A Summer Place, David.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Oh, boy, running across Steele's arms.
John, Martian, you know.
Exactly. And now then, here's Putin. He's turning the Russian Republic back into the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. They're losing ground right and left, and Bush is imitating it. He's trying to imitate some of the Stalinist tactics. And, oh, gee whiz, a little bit of discrepancy between our position, the Bush position, I should say, and the Russian, Putin's position regarding Iran. Oh, boy, that's going to make for some great bedfellow action, don't you? Oop, there I go again. Shouldn't have said that.
You just can't say that.
I just can't. Oh, they're just all right there in front of us. I wonder what Scotty McClellan's doing tonight.
Well, I don't know. Go ask Jeff Gannon.
Yeah, thank you. I was trying to draw a breath and say, question for Mr. Gannon, please.
Texas primary was yesterday. Scotty's a Texan too. I'm guessing he spent his night at the Backless Chap Saloon in Austin. You know.
I think he wears his hat sideways.
God, we're mean. You know that they're right. The right wingers are right. Us liberals, we're just mean people.
Yeah, because we speak the truth and they can't take it. Yeah, and MLW like your analogy about NASA, spent bazillions of dollars rather than using a pencil in space. Oh, no, we've got to invent a ballpoint pen that, you know, goes back.
Going to write on a penguin's butt in Antarctica at 220 exactly. degrees below zero Fahrenheit, sure.
Meanwhile, the Russians go, use pencil, next project. You know, so what does George do? Spend $2 million flying an airplane.
I know.
Flying Air Force One to Crawford to vote for what will be.
Well, isn't this
the indicted, convicted criminal in the history of representative government?
You remember when Saddam would go vote, and there would be like this cadre of faithful reporters behind him, and the flash bulbs. You know, you do the photography thing, and it's all click, 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 flashity, 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 as he drops his little. Damnation. They used paper ballots in Iraq, dropping his little ballots in the box. You remember that? And then you mentioned the Soviet Union. Remember Leonid Brezhnev going to vote for himself? Oh. And, you know, there's 19 dozen devoted Soviet photographers from TASS and Pravda and Izvestia. And they're, you know, they click, click, flash, flash. And, you know, and Chairman Brezhnev today voted in our fair and democratic election. Same damn thing happens in Crawford.
Couldn't do the mail-in. Couldn't do the absentee ballot.
Well, you know, that's the thing. We talk about how cotton picking stupid he is. Maybe he couldn't do the absentee ballot. Remember, the HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, that manages to place all these godforsaken, ignorant, don't-work-in-the-rain black box voting machines in all of our precincts, that whole thing is crafted around sort of a bootstrapping to the concept behind the Americans with Disability Act that, you know, disabled Americans have to vote on Diebold machines because they, you know, I mean, there's so much ugliness, you know, I couldn't fit the pencil into my claw, so I can't vote on a paper ballot. Agnes just hit herself in the head. That's not how I think, you know that. But that's where the Help America Vote Act comes from, is to encourage the disabled to get out and vote. Maybe that's why George Bush needs a touchscreen machine. Maybe that's why he had to fly to Crawford.
Did they have pictures so he could do it without reading?
And a crayon to touch the screen with.
Or maybe a very large square the size of his elbow. Look, Mama Dad, I did it with my elbow.
We're getting meaner by the minute, David.
Oh, it's been a pretty interesting day in this part of Tennessee. What the heck? I'm living it up.
Well, you know, I get accused of being such a bummer from time to time. It's nice to get a giggle out of things any way that we can.
Well, we deserve one. Lord knows we've had 5 years of that chimp. We need a few laughs.
Well, you know, coming soon to a neighborhood near you, the Department of Homeland Security Center for, oh, what is it? Yeah, the Department of Homeland Security Center for Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, David.
So the brown shirts are going to be sponsored by the church now? Is that?
Well, they're going to be. Yeah, they're. You know, this is where James, Dr. Dobson, and Falwell and Robertson get to send their little mega church leaders and their little acolytes to be chaplains in the concentration camp.
If I drive through Missouri once I get that law through, I have to put like 10% of gas purchases in a little tithe box that the quick pack going through.
I kind of think you do. Oh, my God.
It's a pretty darn good chance I'll never go to Missouri anyway.
Well, you know, it's hot on the heels of that bill naming Christianity as the only true religion in Missouri. There was another bill that didn't get as much follow-up saying that the license plates would no longer say show me, but rather baptize me.
You're making that up. Please tell me you're making that up.
I was going to say, tough damn crowd tonight. Yeah.
Even at the state legislature level, I'm sure.
Now, see, that's the sad thing. You were ready to buy that. You were ready to buy that, David.
It could be a possibility. But
it could work.
Of course I would. I'm sorry. It's an almost southern state. It's a Bible Belt. Well, you know, it's an almost Bible Belt state. Well, never mind.
It's on the whipping end of the belt.
Well, that state gave us Ashcroft. Any damn thing could come out of there.
Crisco. Hey, David, we're going to roll on and take another call.
Oh, please do, Bob. Thank you. You know, I've just beaten the daylights out of the bottom of the hour break.
This is worth it. Agnes is okay with it. You know, she didn't have the skillet out, so.
All right.
Well,
Agnes says she's got something for you here in a little bit.
Okay, cool.
All right. Later.
Yeah.
And our good friend Gene calling from Oregon. Hey, Gene, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm drying out. I've been out all day running around. I did see the sun, though, just before I came in. So, it'd be nice. Couple of quick things. I got to tell you that a couple of months ago, I went to a voting thing here in Portland about how the activist voting and how to avoid those machines. And one of the things about the disability voting is that the lady that one of the speakers has actually come up with a way of doing it with basically a paper ballot and a plastic piece of sheeting that you put over it for the blind.
Okay.
So, the disability thing, that's hogwash.
Yeah, it is hogwash, but that's where it all originated, isn't it?
Oh yeah, that is where it's originated. They push it to make it sound like you got to have the machines for the disabled. It's like bull crap. You don't need that stuff. So
yeah,
so I just had to throw that in there. You might have covered this already, but like I said, I missed like most of your first hour because I came in and was out all day. Did you hear anything on 4167?
I looked high and low, Gene, and because I had your note from earlier, and a brilliant observation on your part, by the way. I looked at 4167 and couldn't find a blessed thing.
Okay, maybe they either put it off or maybe they just stuck it in there. I was just curious.
But it ties in so nicely with the idea of all these faith-based initiatives, the federal government wanting to more or less, water down labeling requirements. You know, does that include labeling for halal and kosher?
I don't know. I looked after I sent you, and I couldn't find.
Well, it was due to go down today, Gene.
Yeah, it was due, and the only thing I was thinking of when you talked about the faith-based initiatives and the camps that they might kind of put the ground in for. It's like, maybe that's the only way they can get us to eat the food. I don't know.
God, I love the way you guys think. I honestly
anyway,
God do.
Anyway, I suppose I best run because I'm because it's late and I was out and stuff. I splurged and ordered out. I'm getting some Thai food. So.
Oh, Thai? Oh, God, I love Thai food.
Yeah. I do too.
Yeah, we don't have Thai food here in West Virginia. If we have it, we make it ourselves.
Mm. Yeah, well, I'm lucky that way.
Oh, delivery Thai food. I'm jealous, Gene.
Believe me, at 2241 You don't have to be that jealous.
You have a great night, Gene. Take care, brother.
Bye.
Oh. You got, you know, in the face of all of this, you maintain a sense of humor. And I don't know if you know how valuable that is, but it is. Let's take a quick break before, and then we'll come back and wrap things up. I thought that's what you wanted, Agnes. You gave me the take a break look.
Yeah, this is what I've got for David.
Oh, okay. This is
This sums up it all.
Oh, okay.
Leo, do you enjoy opera?
I do. Do you?
Oh, yes. It keeps me alive.
Do you have a favorite?
Bohème. La Bohème.
La Bohème.
Seen it 12 times. That's how I learned to speak French.
You speak French?
Fluently.
Que ton visage est doux, entouré par la lumière de la lune.
What did he say?
How sweet your face looks gently encircled by the soft moonlight.
Oh, I like that.
From the opening scene of Bohème, a stunning duet.
André sings it to Mimi. André. I invited Kate to the Met next week. She's never been. Patron is singing André, and she turned me down. Can you explain that, Leopold?
Well, Bohème is one of man's great achievements and should not be missed. But perhaps Kate resists on moral grounds.
How so?
Should we get the check?
Well, some feel that to court a woman in one's employ is nothing more than a serpentine effort to transform a lady to a whore.
Oh. JJ. This guy's charming, Kate. The Duke of Margarine thinks me a serpent.
No, he doesn't.
No, not a servant. That's too grand a word. Simply a braggart and a cad who knows less French than I, if that's possible. By the way, there is no André in Bohème. It's Rodolfo. And though it takes place in France, it's rarely played in French as it is written in Italian. Good night.
Okay,
looking at me strangely now.
I'm a checker player to Agnes's chess player, and she's like 8 moves ahead of me. But it's that line about what is it?
It's
no, where something for playing a
turning a lady
into a whore. Yeah. Okay, that's where it's the bait and switch. That's okay. So that's a rock, and that's I get it now. Wow.
I'm
wow. Okay.
With you, Bob.
No. I'm a little slow here. took me a minute. Just took me a minute. But you know, I come around. I'm still trying to sort this out. You know, I am.
What kind of man are you?
Not one who understood that clip. That's what kind of man I am. Jeez. I get it. Okay. So it's 8 minutes before the hour, and I am completely befuddled at this point. I thought I was going to go somewhere with the... and then we get the... Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of the fraud that is Iraq, at least 8,000 members of the all-volunteer U.S. military have deserted since the Iraq War began. I call those people patriots. Now, I know I'm going to get some people mad at me for that, but the fact of the matter is, on this program, we talk about doing the right thing, and when you catch yourself not doing the right thing, you stop, and you've got any sort of moral compass about you whatsoever, you stop doing the wrong thing, and you start doing the right one. Right? Sure, why not? Oh, and by the way, all this Homeland Security talk... this is, let it speak for itself. You know, Michael Chertoff is not, or not Michael Chertoff, no, this is John Negroponte. This is the guy where death squads spring up like little daffodils out of the spring earth everywhere he goes. On many a workday lunchtime, the nominal boss of U.S. intelligence, John Negroponte, can be found, okay, this is, okay, if he was a Democrat and he was competent, can be found behind his desk, dutifully working, blah, 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 blah. No. On many a workday lunchtime, the nominal boss of U.S. intelligence, John D. Negroponte, can be found at a private club in downtown Washington, getting a massage, taking a swim, and having lunch, followed by a good cigar and a perusal of the daily papers in the club's library. Quote, he spends 3 hours there Monday through Friday, unquote, gripes a senior counterterrorism official, noting that the former ambassador has a security detail sitting outside all that time in chase cars. Others say they've seen the director of national intelligence at the university club, a 100-year-old mansion-like redoubt of dark oak panels and high ceilings a few blocks from the White House, only several times a week. Not Monday through Friday, just several times a week. He needs a comfort zone, as this explains. Forced as he is to spend hours in the witness chair in front of mean congressional committees, fielding hot potatoes on subjects over which he has no control, the NSA's warrantless surveillance, domestic spying by secret military intelligence units, paying newspapers in Iraq to run pro-U.S. stories, which, by the way, the military said the other day they're going to continue to do. What you have here, this is the national security crowd. This is the gang that's going to keep us safe. I mean, you've seen the movie scenes, you know, the towel over in the steamy room, and the big guy comes in, and he's with the Swedish massage, and then he gets done, he catches a little steam room action, does a little sauna, does a little hot tub, catches a shower, sits back in the club room with a nice, and you know these dudes don't smoke Dominicans, with a nice Cuban cigar, because he has nothing to do. He's lost. He's clueless. He's John Negroponte, who has finally been promoted upward so far that he is in his retirement. Now, working people in America, they're losing their retirements every day. It happened yesterday to something on the order of several thousand GM white-collar salaried personnel. But that's okay. There's an entire staff of security personnel sitting downstairs in the car by the curb, waiting for John Negroponte to get done with his massage and his lunch and his cigar and his newspaper. Whew. Good work if you can get it, huh? Well, the show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, who has arcane tastes in movie clips, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. Randy Kerbway is our engineer. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He maintains the stream of this program as well as the archives of this and several other wonderful liberal talk programs. In fact, he is the hardest working man in liberal talk. And remember, he's got links on his page where you can go shopping for a book. If you want to help out Ben, one of the ways you can do it is when you order Inequality Matters, whose editor, Jim Lardner, we talked to this evening. When you go to order Inequality Matters, go through one of the portals at WhiteRoseSociety.org. That's a great way of helping Ben, because he gets a little commission on the sale. And remember, it's your chance to help him, because he's not going to send you a bill. And, of course, every night this whole thing happens because there are dedicated, progressive, pro-America, America-minded workers at the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights who go out every day and do a little bit more to build the American dream, and through their support of this program, do a little bit every day to rebuild the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.